Welcome to the Silver Shield Report number 29. This week is kind of a different special treat, I guess. Last weekend, I actually drove all the way out to Rochester, Michigan to do a private meeting in a country club. And it was kind of an odd situation because I really don't get out and speak very much. I was offered to come out. Jay, who you guys may know as audit director on the site, contacted me about coming out to Michigan. And, you know, I'm actually from that area. My father worked for General Motors, and there's obviously a lot of car businesses in that area. And as I was driving up the, I think it was one of the roads, I recognized buildings that I had seen from when I was in first grade. And it kind of was a weird feeling to be back in that part of the country. But we had a really great reception. I think we had probably about 50 people in the room. Jay was very generous. He paid for me to come out to, stayed in a hotel the night before and took me out to dinner. And of course, got a couple beers in me and I really get my mouth going. But we had a really great time. And I really want to thank Jay. I think I was handled very well. He had everything taken care of from the food and the arrangements and everything. He just did a fabulous job. And I think it provided a great way to create a local community. And, it's tough to get to know the people in your area, especially because, in general, we're kind of, distant kind of people. We really don't want to get involved with others because we feel that there's, perhaps security issues to deal with or stuff like that. Or maybe, the people that are involved in this movement are a little crazy once in a while. But I think that the people that are attracted to my message tend to kind of filter out and really are a great and wonderful positive crowd. I couldn't get over the faces that were in the crowd. I mean, we had all nationalities, old people, young people, couples that were there. It was just a really great mix. And it wasn't a crowd that I think really knew who I was. When I asked, how many people had heard of me, there was probably about 2/3 of the room that, had heard of me. And then there's the other third that had no clue why they were there. And basically I had a whole thing prepared about how to wake up people, but when I saw a good portion of the room didn't even know who I was, I figured I had to make the case. And what ended up occurring was for the first, I think, 26 minutes of this tape you'll hear, it's just basically me, answering questions and meeting people in the room. And then I think at the 26-point mark after wherever this is, this little introduction ends, I get in, Jay introduces me, and we go on from there. And I'll put a little key marker on the blog post. But one of the interesting things that I saw coming out of this was that there was a lot of disconcerted faces when I was going through the very harsh realities that we had to go through. But I think I finished it up with a very firm understanding, and I think people walked out of there at a very positive experience. I certainly got a lot of applause at the end. But I think this could go into a great way of developing local pockets of resistance, so to speak. So I know Jay's purpose of doing this was really to get to know people. And the way that he had it set up, and I had him write an article, and I'll attach it onto here, about what he did and how he went about doing it. But it's actually a pretty smart way because by bringing me in there, I can help, attract, the right amount of people. And then he had people RSVP if they were going to come to get tickets and stuff. And he did great things. Like he gave away, silver half dollars for prizes and, provided food and drinks and all sorts of stuff. So, really just put on a classy show. But it was great because now he's got, 50 people in his backyard that share the same values as him. And I think that's a wonderful way of bringing people together. And, these are people that you would never meet. I mean, there's people who, lived almost next door to each other. And you're like, wow, you live in the same neighborhood. You share the same values. And this is a great way to start building local areas of resistance. And, could be support, could be resistance. But it's somebody that you know that you can trust that saw the same thing that you saw before this happened. Because afterwards, people's motives are going to become very desperate. And I covered this topic inside this Silver Shield report. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope this sparks a lot of conversation. I don't know if this is something that I'm going to continue to do because it is a, you know, it's a time suck on me. And, you know, I certainly, you know, it's not necessarily the highest, best use of my time. But, you know, this is something that I would, you know, perhaps be persuaded into if the timing and the situation and things were right. That being said, I do, and I know I've been dragging it, and I was promising by the end of April, I do plan on having virtual meetings, and I this is something I definitely want to do. But I keep getting sidetracked with trying to get these videos done. I have, like I said, probably about 3 or 4 more videos to do in the Silver Bullet and the Silver Shield. I have probably 5 or 6 more videos I want to do just to complete the Denial series. And then I'm going to do the, Decade of Denial and Deception. And then I'm going to be done with YouTube for quite a while, and really focus on the Silver Bullet or on the Silver Shield report. And I really want to create a more sense of a local community. I think we've been laying all this intellectual foundation, you know, crossing issues, you know, the generational gap issue that seemed to be a real good, you know, comment on, you know, breaking through all this stuff. And I really want to start focusing on more of the hows, what we can do, what kind of resources we have, what we could do. And I hope that these, you know, virtual meetings, I don't know if I'm going to have like an event where I'm going to have a virtual event where I'll have speakers come in and hopefully bring in a lot more people to our little group here. But I'm very happy. We're 6 months into creating this virtual community that I hope turns into a very real, profitable, successful, happy community in the future. And this is all the steps I feel are necessary in order to make this happen. So hope you enjoy this one, and here we go.
I'm going to have to take on the Alex Jones dragon because he's the biggest guy out there. But as much as I know that he was a part of my awakening, he's certainly not been one to advance people beyond that. I think he's actually been a detriment overall. And, you know, I'm trying to stay away from it, but at some point I'm going to have to address it because it's something everybody feels. You know, but I don't want to be viewed as this, you know, chopping down other people, because I'm a firm believer. Like, I came up, you know, the first video on my thing, listen to all, follow none, and walk your own path the best that you can. And, you know, if you want to listen to Alex and, you know, the pastor that he has on and all these other good, that's great. And he's providing a great platform for other people to get out there. But his own personal work, it's all about panic and fear and it's all about now. So few of it has got to do with the context of, you know, how we got in this mess, but and nobody's offering any positive solutions. I mean, you know, the solutions, you know, go buy food, guns, and bullets and you know, hide yourself in the basement and pray for a zombie apocalypse. You know, it's like, really? Can't we do better than that? Don't we have enough information? Can't we do something positive together?
Yeah,
so
there is no answer. They're giving no answer.
No.
And that's, you know,
but I understand, because from a business standpoint, man, that's the moneymaker. Sell fear. That is the moneymaker.
Sell the solution.
Don't sell a solution. Why sell a solution? It's just like, you know, cancer. There's so much money to be made in the fundraising, the promotion, the research, the drugs, and why cure cancer? Well, it's the same thing with this. Why cure the problem? There's so much more money to be made in keeping people in this constant loop of fear.
Right. It's like, if you listen to Sean Hannity, after you listen to them for about a year or two, it's the same stuff. I mean, they're just talking about the same thing. There is no answers. It's the same.
Well, you know, that's just the way that people are. I mean, that they confine themselves to a narrow spectrum of view, and then they either protect that narrow spectrum of view because now they're personally invested. So just like how everybody in the world is personally invested in this paradigm, whether you're a welfare recipient, a business owner, you know, somebody who's working for a corporation that makes their living off of this paradigm, they're personally invested in it. That's why you can't break through to them. You can't break through to people when they're personally invested in something. Okay? So most of these commentators out there hold the same narrow point of view and defend it. I come at it like, I don't know everything. I want to ask as many questions as possible. I don't care if what I have right now is the answer. I know that if I keep asking questions, keep pushing forward and looking to the fundamental, we're going to get there.
Yeah, you're not locked in. Like, even Bob Chapman, I mean, but
Yeah, I mean, I listen to Bob Salente, all these guys. And after a while, man, it's the same thing. You know, how many times are you going to hear about
it?
Yeah.
You're the only one that seems to at least you have the idea. It's funny because if you actually walk away mentally and in every way.
And it works in a personal level. I'm a firm believer. Bring it down to the most fundamental level. If it works in your personal life. You know, if you're in a relationship with some psychopath, weirdo person, whether you're working for them, married to them, or whatever, walk away from them. You go to court and fight and do all that other stuff, you're nuts. You're playing right into their strongest cards because they get off on it, okay? You're empowering them by giving them attention.
Yeah.
The best thing you could do is just walk away from them and never talk to them again. Well, it's the same thing that works in societies. If we're against war and we're against debt and all, walk away from it on a personal level.
That's the answer. You don't have to debate it or anything.
It's non-compliance.
And it's easy. And it's something in your control.
Yeah.
You know, because like one of the things that, you know, I did that video about Ron Paul. Ron was, you know, Ron and Alex, big things for me, 2005, 2006, 2000. But at the end of the day, they're using a collect. They're trying to get people collectively to go out and change the world, and that's the exact same paradigm that we've been stuck in for 6,000 years. One group of people think that they're right, and they're going to enforce their will upon somebody else, instead of saying, "Hey, individually, we can be independent of it."
Then I have a question.
Chris, you want some coffee? Or
yeah.
Because I agree with what you're saying. Ultimately, the control that you have is over yourself.
And that's it.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yep.
Starts with
what do you want, Chris?
Just regular.
And I was listening to G. Edward Griffin talk about the illusion of the collective.
Yeah.
Because every group is made up of individuals. And for a long time, I thought, well, that makes the most sense. It's quite true. But in psychology, they talk about how you have groupthink and social dynamics where this herd mentality comes in and individuality seems to like fade as you acquiesce to
pressures.
Like, what was that story?
The what?
The experiment.
What is the experiment? Because I probably know it by its.
It was the one where they had the different length of the lines.
Okay.
They hired a team of actors in the focus group who all were all going to agree that the lines were exactly the same.
Same.
One of them was obviously
longer. But everybody, yeah. Well, it's sort of like the. There was another experiment on the Mildred experiment, or I forget the name, but about basically people, you know, doing the electroshock test. And they found that when there was nobody else there to voice a dissenting idea, you know, 70-80% of the people would shock somebody to death. But as soon as one person, one individual said, "Hey, I'm not down with this," it dropped immediately. And that's what it takes. It takes individuals to say, "Not for me." You know? How you doing? What was your name?
Chuck.
Chuck, nice to meet you. I'm Chris.
Nice to see you.
How you doing?
I'm Greg.
Nice to meet you.
Hi. My mother was fancy.
That's Jay over there.
Yeah, Jay's the one responsible for all this.
Yeah,
cool.
Drinks right out here. Yeah, please. And they're bringing coffee too, but right now there's iced tea and pops and water.
What were you saying before?
Oh, wow.
He chewed my ear off all last night, so.
But I don't know. My point is,
in that stage of denial, even with people that are supposedly awake to everything, because you know, you have, like you were mentioning, Bob Chapman. He's like, they want to, and they're not going to get it, and they're not, you know. He's like, well, we're going to do that, and they just think that.
Well, just the fact that he pushes mining stocks. Okay, I mean, if we're talking about a mathematical collapse of the dollar, the currency doesn't work. How are you going to have markets that work? And then if you have a government that's desperate, what's the first thing that they're going to nationalize? Things that have real tangible value. You know, that's one of the big things that I really don't like about what is going on out there. So many of the guys that offer solutions, they're excellent at describing the problem. I mean, I've got guys who took, you know, almost word for word of the stuff that I've done. And then they'll put, you know, that's why a lot of these documentaries, you know, instead of watching a 2-hour documentary, go to the last 15 minutes, because that's where the lie is. The, you know, they'll tell you 90% of the truth, but the lie is always at the close.
Sure.
So,
yes.
You know, and that's why it saved me a lot. Like, I had to go through tons of information. And there wasn't a documentary out there. I probably watched 200 documentaries out there before 2008. And I just get to the point where, like, okay, heard this, I get this, okay. And then like, zeitgeist. You get to the bottom of it, and you're like, okay, it sounds like New Age collectivism.
It is New Age.
Okay, what's great about that?
It's the world religion that they're going to be bringing.
Yeah, like...
Absolutely. You know? It takes a lot to be able to diagnose it, you know?
Yeah.
When I first started opening my eyes, I would do the way you're saying. I wouldn't watch as much, but... And watch it and try to figure it out. It takes a long time to find
it. Well, and that's why I think what I did with the Academy was, it's got to be a huge help, because it's speeding up that learning curve. That took me 2-3 years to read all those books, to throw out all the bullshit that didn't agree with me. And I kept, you know, putting this into some sort of order, because I wish that, you know, I learned about one thing. You know, like early on, I read Atlas Shrugged way early on. I know that I would read it again with totally different eyes, now knowing what I know now. So much of the information that I consumed, I didn't have the proper context for it. So as I put the Academy together, I'm like, hey, you know, here's an opportunity for me to lay out easily for other people to say, hey, this is what I wanted to know at the beginning. I need to know that I'm trapped. I'm a slave. I mean, we all have, and it's been throughout all of humanity. And here's how they do it. Here's who profits from this. Here's, you know, the mechanisms, the systems, the illusions that they create that we fall along in. And then you get to the end of it, and you realize problems start and stop with me. It's not these big bad guys out there. Yeah, I did a lot of research on the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and, you know, all these spooky, scary groups out there. But at the end of the day, what are they but a bunch of weird, weird men? Like... And you see David Rockefeller now, he's one of the head guys. This guy's a, you know, one colostomy bag away from the death chair. He's going around in his wheelchair, and we're afraid of him. You know, these guys don't have to deal with paying taxes, worrying about some boss, getting divorced, lawsuits, you know, having a cop pull you over and running you. These guys live in such a bubble world, like, they're not as strong as us. I can't hear you.
Is it really the individual acquiescence of our own power as we, you know, day by day comply with all the little different things?
And day by day you can walk away and have the exact same power. As much as you're enslaving yourself, you have that much power to empower yourself. Oh, of course. Yeah, buying physical silver, that's a heady consequence. Having your real wealth in your possession, you lose it, you're out, buddy. There's no bank, no FDIC, nobody to go sue or anything. That's your ass. It comes with responsibility.
That's when I was listening. I used to listen to Bill Cooper.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he talked about how we're, you know, through the legal system, contract.
Yeah. The sovereignty thing. Yeah.
And that, you know, but he made a point, and I agree with him, is that the minute we're born into the world, we spend all of our time trying to figure out how to get back into the world.
Yeah, the protective part, yeah. It's not easy. But I tell you what, it becomes easier when you do focus on yourself. It becomes easier when you realize that you're not alone. You know, that's why I like the idea. I mean, my YouTube channel is blown up. I mean, we got 11,000 subscribers in 5 months. I mean, there's guys that have been on there that I respect. You know, Chris Martinson did the crash course. Really powerful stuff for me. He's only got 8,000 subscribers, and he's been doing it for years. You know, and I've been on there for 6 months, and bam, we're at 11,000, and we're growing faster than every other channel out there except for Alex Jones, who's, you know, got 250,000 subscribers, so.
Hi. What was your first name?
I'm John.
John.
Hi, John. I'm Jay.
Jay Taylor. Are you Dr. Bauer?
No,
you're not Dr.
Chris is a chat.
Hey, Chris, nice to meet you.
He's a Canadian, but he's living here now. He's
all right. Freedom lover.
Yeah.
Freedom lover. That's all that matters.
My wife is plenty shy for some reason.
That's all right.
We kind of hang around with him a little bit.
Well, good.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Now, did you bring him here? Or? Okay, I figured. I did that for college once. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
he's got two young kids.
Six and three. Yeah. Yeah. So I slept really good last night. Everybody's like, how'd you sleep? I'm like, yeah, not having kids waking you up at 5 o'clock in the morning is real good. Yeah, she slept. I called her. She's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had like 2 hours of sleep last night. Because of that. They just they know that I'm not around and.
Where are you from?
Jump on her, Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I had to make a little drive. Yeah.
We should go take a road trip.
Yeah, we're in Cleveland twice a year doing shows.
Yeah. What do you do?
Well, she has. Well, we have a business. She primarily rents it, so we do magnetic jewelry for health reasons.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do quite well with it.
Good.
There's a big big Christmas show there.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Cleveland Christmas Connection.
Yeah.
What is it? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a little bit of a hermit, so I don't get out. I know where the expo center is, but I work so many hours, like I just never leave my house. So I don't know Ohio as well as I did in New Jersey. Like New Jersey, I was in the car business, so I knew everywhere. I mean, you know, just drove around all over the place. But here, I've been working on my computer all the time, and like I never get out.
No, that's interesting, Chris, in the car business, and you're in such a blue-collar family.
I did that very purposely.
I
I grew up very wealthy in a very wealthy area. Oh, yeah, my father's got 7 car dealerships. I mean, big money. He's got an 80-foot Sea Ray.
Chris, we got to get back along, and let's go boating.
But in 2005... I woke up to the housing bubble. I said, holy shit.
In 05?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I wondered why things were doing so well and why wasn't it always this way?
Yeah.
You know, here's 20, 30-year-old kids making more money than their parents who slaved away, you know, working 9 to 5 doing this. Why is the world so awesome now for us? Well, I found out it was because we had a massive amount of debt that was being created. Well, with all this money flowing around, how could you not make money, you know?
Right.
So that scared me, you know, because here we were making tons of money because as car dealers, that's all we do is make debt.
Yeah.
People come into car business, they're not paying me $30,000 cash.
That's right.
They're signing a contract. Well, that's every time you sign a contract, you're creating $30,000 worth of money out there. That money flows into, I get my money first shot.
Yeah.
That contract's cash, I'm getting $2,000 that you haven't even paid for yet. Okay? That's why the car dealers were making so much money because we're creating all this debt. So then I go, well, no wonder the housing market's doing really well because mortgages are so cheap. They got the government saying everybody should own a home. People who I know should not be buying a used car are buying $250,000 homes with no proof of income. I said, this is, I'm out of here. So I sold my house in July of 2005. Which for New Jersey was the month that it was, that was the top. I mean, you can go back to any chart in New Jersey. That was it. And then I said, all right, well, what am I going to do with all this cash? Because it was all tax-free money. I mean, you sell your primary residence.
Right.
You know, I got all this tax-free money sitting there. I'm like, well, what am I going to do with it? So I looked at stocks and bonds, and I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense because it's all based on debt. That's paper and, you know, counterparty risk, and it's all going to fall apart. So I found gold and silver. And I'm like, I remember my grandfather talking about some coins and stuff. And, you know, I was like, I remember telling him, I'm going, what would you do with that? Like, it, you know, you can't go buy anything with it. So then the more I looked into it, the more I saw that silver was the only investment. So I just went all into that. And then I spent the next 3 years trying to convince my parents, my baby boomer partners, guys, this is as good as it's going to get. Get out. And they were convinced, no, we're going to go buy more land, more debt, more franchises, more. We're going to be really big one day. And I told them, I said, you should sell because you can go back and buy all this for pennies on the dollar. And for 3 years, I mean, I really was working on my dad the most, but my partner... just a real douche. No one wants to listen. But worse, mocked me. Like, I didn't know what I was talking about. And here I am going, you know what, I'm doing all this reading and researching and questioning, and you're going to sit here and, you know, act like you know better than me? So I gave up on him, gave up on my mom, but I was really working on my dad. He was responsive, but, you know, ultimately he didn't do much. I got him to buy, like, 10,000 ounces as basically shut-up money. Like, you know, here. I'm going to buy something to...
At $1,600 an ounce? Yeah, that's...
No, it was $7 an ounce.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, let's still leave it then.
Oh, man, you got it at the right time.
So,
I wish I would have sold all my property.
But you know where you are right now. That's what I'm trying to tell people. $31 silver to me is insane.
That's right.
Since 2005, there's been $8 trillion of U.S. federal debt that's been created since that time period. How is it? How is it that possible that these billions of ounces of silver are only worth this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so everybody goes, oh, you got, you're lucky you got in, it's, you know, it's 7. You guys are going to be kicking yourself in the pants that you didn't buy more at 31. I mean, your children's children are going to look back at what you guys did and didn't do.
Look forward to this.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
I usually get so pumped up and work up a sweat doing these things.
This is what we're here for.
Yeah. No, I only did one other one. But, yeah. I told Jay, I said, I don't even know why I said yes. Like, he must have just caught me at normal. I mean, I get a lot of offers, but I usually just, I don't know. I usually delete them, and I'm like, you know, it's close. I'm from here. I lived in Rochester for 3 years. I went to kindergarten and first grade here, so it was close enough, 3-hour drive. I figured it'd be nice. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. My father worked for General Motors for probably about 15 years, and then had the opportunity to partner with a dealer in '87. Been doing that ever since. Yeah, my father-in-law and brother-in-law both worked for Ford. My father-in-law retired. My brother-in-law still working there.
In one of the videos, you know, you mentioned the movie and title.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the way I've looked into it, it's pretty much impossible to get that.
Yes.
And then also,
I think only Texas and I don't know, Wyoming or one other state has it even available, but even then it's difficult. The only reason why I bring it up is because I believe that when this paradigm goes down, the ultimate exit strategy, I think those that have silver are going to be able to get a Lloydial title.
Let me ask you this. Is the reason because silver
gold
has gold title?
Well, yeah. I mean, right now, he who has the gold makes the rules. That's the few assets that you don't need a paper contract to justify or a counterparty risk to justify its value. Okay, so gold and silver have a Lloydial title. They always have and they always will, as long as it is in your possession. You got it in a vault. They're allowed to lease it out, sell it out, borrow it, give you promissory notes. They can do whatever you want. You hold it. You own it.
And the Federal Reserve notes hold the equitable title, right?
A Federal Reserve note is just debt. So.
But have you heard, like, the way I understand it, I can't prove this, but it's that because the Fed loans the money into circulation,
yes,
it transfers equitable title but not legal title.
Yeah.
Such that anything that you buy with them, since you only have the right to use it, you don't hold legal ownership of the note itself.
Well,
it belongs to the Fed.
Yes. When money is created, debt is created. So the Federal Reserve creates debt in order to print that into circulation. The Treasury says, hey, we need $1 billion. Fed says, hey, give me $1 billion bond.
Right.
We'll take the bond. That's the asset.
Right.
The bond is the asset.
Sure. The contract's worth more than the...
Yeah, because the contract has interest that's due back on it.
Yeah.
But if only $1 billion goes into circulation, the only way to pay that bond back with interest is you need to create more debt. So we got this Ponzi scheme loop that goes on.
Yeah. And I,
so as a result, since the basis of our money that all the other assets are funded on is based on that debt, he who has that, you know, the debt in their possession, they really own the world.
The name of the game of capitalism is who is indebted to whom.
Well, what kind of capitalism? State capitalism or free market capitalism? I think capitalism in itself, people don't get it. It's either, yeah, I mean, you can have state capitalism, which is no different than fascism, or you can have free market capitalism. Yeah. Or you know, they call the black market. Well, it's not the black market, it's free market, you know?
That's right. There's no substitute for real freedom.
Oh, that's what I'm telling people. Like, right now, the economy sucks. Like, what else should you be working for? Do you really think starting a business in this economy is really going to work? I mean, the whole system could go kablooey next year. What's the point? You know? And then you're also, you know, a legal target, tax, you know, there's so much liability. Hiring an employee sucks. You know,
it's getting worse and worse. And we have the highest corporate tax rate.
Well, now we do. And the taxes are going to, if the Bush tax cuts don't get extended, next year it's going to be ridiculous. But they did it just to get past the elections.
Yeah, they're killing it. Well, I mean, we're dead. We're, as you said, that's...
There's no fixing the system. That's why it's ridiculous to work within it. You're better to walk away from it and do what you can.
So, let me ask you this, then. In the time, you know, obviously right now, we just had a dip in the gold and silver, you know, and the suppression continues because the cat's not completely out of the bag yet, right? So, we still need to acquire... Federal Reserve notes or other fiat currencies within the system in order to purchase
the
real. So
what's
an efficient way to be able to get that, to get the real money?
Well, do what pays the most around here. So right now, this is another thing that you can put in your back of your mind. In this paradigm, things that don't provide real tangible value have the most value. So if you look at all the guys that are making the most money right now, they provide no value to humanity. Paper shuffle.
What about the energy?
Well, they do.
Those guys and pharmaceuticals.
Pharmaceuticals. I don't believe her. Yeah, I don't. I'm not a big fan of pharmaceuticals. So.
Technologies.
Technology's good, but look in the broad spectrum. Look who's making the most money: the lawyers, the stockbrokers, the politicians, the military contractors, the NBA stars, the all the people on TV, the celebrities, movie, all this. Baloney. Those are the guys making millions of dollars. Yeah, there's a few industrialists that actually produce stuff out of the earth. That's where real wealth comes from. Okay.
You think mining's still good?
I think mining's great. I wouldn't own a mining stock if you paid me.
No, I mean owning a mine.
No, I would not want to own. I would not want to own any other asset in the world right now than silver. Why buy a mine when you can actually buy the stuff
what
that's
if already? You already have it though.
You better sell it. You better sell.
What if there's silver in it?
No, then sell the asset that you have and go buy the silver. Don't, because the problem with mining stocks right now, the problem with mine right now is if you look at a government that's going to be incredibly hurting for cash when their banking system blows up, what assets do you think are they're going to go after first? Those that have real value. They'll confiscate your ass. Eminent domain, national security reasons, whatever it is, and they won't pay you anything that you deserve.
Do you want a pop, Chris?
Water and pop, anything?
Yeah, water, definitely.
Speaking of water, what about that? They're going to confiscate that too, in your opinion?
If you looked at
Agenda 21?
No, the executive order that Obama signed on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Basically, we own nothing. We don't even own the water that rolls off your house,
roof.
Your roof. And they don't even have to declare a national emergency. That's the weird thing, the language that was in that. They basically said that if there is emergency, lead up to emergency, or no emergency at all, they have the right to confiscate your car, the water that comes off your thing, food in your backyard. They can make any rule that they want right now. Okay. The problem is, how are they going to implement it? Okay. They're not going to do it before the paradigm collapses. After the paradigm collapses, who are they going to pay? Because you're going to have millions of pissed off government employees that are going to be like, hey, my pension just got wiped out. My check just bounced. You think I'm going to go risk my life going stealing my tomatoes from my next door neighbor? So right now we're heading into a time of the most serious risk that you could possibly have in any asset out there. And it is most important that you take all your wealth out of this paradigm, put it into gold, silver, food, guns, you know, stuff that you own and touch.
That's what I'm saying, but you're saying that they can come snag it anyway. So if I got
to... I tell you what, if somebody comes to my door and tries to take your guns, what are you going to do? Somebody comes to your door and takes your kids, what are you going to do? Somebody comes to your door and takes your silver, what are you going to do? Okay? But now, unless somebody comes to take your mine, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's time to get started. Hey, welcome to Independence Township. My name is Jay Taylor. I'm hosting the session today. Very pleased to have brought from Ohio Chris Duane. Duane is married, father of two, served our country in the United States Marines, and has really been a great blogger, a great resource for me. I came across Chris about 9 months ago online, something called the Sons of Liberty Academy. Just a ton of really helpful information. And then about 4 or 5 months ago, you started the online subscription newsletter, which I subscribe to. And just by chance...
The Silver Shield Report. I have a lot of different things, so they tend to blend for a lot of people that, you know...
Will you explain how the
different... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I wanted to do is really get people together today to talk about this from a risk management perspective. And what I mean by that is that when there's a possibility of something bad happening, there's all kinds of things you can do, right? You can do nothing, or you can do extreme measures. You can do something in the middle. We're all managing risk every day just driving here in your car. You're putting on your seatbelt, or you're checking to make sure that nobody's going to hit you from the side. We're all risk managers, but sometimes, unless somebody kind of hits you over the head and says, look, there's things going on you need to know about. If you don't know those things are going on, you're probably not doing anything to prepare yourself. So from my perspective, I reached out to Chris, and thank goodness he said yes, he'd come to Michigan to talk to us. We're going to have about an hour of him talking, about an hour of a question and answer. And I really want to have you use this time. And he's got to scoot back home. He's got a commitment he's got to make tonight.
Yeah.
I would ask you, please, put your phones on vibrate so we don't get disturbed. And with that, Chris Wayne.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for coming out here. As Jay said, I don't get out of my house very often, so it's kind of cool to actually go out and see people that are, you know, reading and consuming all the stuff that I'm talking about. Give me a sense, like, who's been to my blog? Don't Tread on Me, okay? Who's never heard of me before? Okay. Let me just start off with the simple fact that our entire way of life is built on debt and death. Let that sink in, because that is how our life is built, okay? We have a system that is built on a privately owned bank, the Federal Reserve, creating money out of nowhere, indebting our nation to put this money into the system. As a result, they have the ability of buying our bankers, our corporations, politicians, militaries, food supply, everything on earth. They have the ability with the stroke of a pen to create trillions of dollars out of thin air and go out into the real world and purchase it, because we're willing to accept this illusion that they're passing on. This has enabled a huge Ponzi scheme to build, because in order for money to come into existence, every dollar that you have in your pocket is actually a dollar's worth of debt, and you don't even know that, okay? So every dollar that you have, these cash notes, it says Federal Reserve note. Note is a debt instrument. The asset, the counterparty to that, is held by the Federal Reserve, because every dollar that comes into existence is debt. And in order for the dollars to come into existence, the base money, the power money, is started with the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. Okay, the Treasury says, hey, because we gave you, group of bankers, this private monopoly, the monopoly on our money, okay, we need $1 billion. The government has to ask some private banker for money instead of just printing it up themselves. Most people go, oh, we just print our money out of existence. No, it's debt. So the Federal Reserve, the private bank, and you guys can look this up, The Creature from Jekyll Island is probably the best book to read about that. In 1913, they established this bank. So the Federal Reserve says, hey, that's cool. We'll give us a billion-dollar treasury note, and we'll give you $1 billion into your account. Well, that $1 billion goes into the Federal Reserve. They have the $1 billion there, and they give credit to the Treasury to create this $1 billion. Problem is, this bond, this Treasury bond, has got debt, $1 billion plus interest. Okay, so if that's the only $1 billion that's in existence, how do you pay that bond back plus the interest? And that's the whole game. The whole game is the only way to pay that back is to take on more debt the next year. So our system is designed. Every year we have to take on more debt than the debt and interest accrued the year before. We all know what happens to compounding interest. At some point, folks, this is going to blow up. Okay? It's either the debt's going to be so large that we can't even pay the interest on it, or they're going to continue to print more and more money, so much so that the dollar has no existence. Okay? So I tell people, when you understand that fundamental fact and you understand that all the mechanisms of control that have to come into place to keep this system going, us creating the world's largest military empire to go out across the world to extract all these resources, to to give good contracts to these corporations to extract the real wealth out of other people's lands and then feed it into our system and shipping labor off so that your jobs are competing against other countries that have slave labor. Okay, I mean, shouldn't we have all listened to Ross Perot in the 90s? You know, the giant sucking sound. We're feeling that now. It's a mathematical inevitability. This entire way of life is going to end. There's no doubt in my mind, 100% certainty. Okay? I came to that conclusion in 2005. I was telling one of the guys here, I come from a very wealthy car business family. Top 1%. My dad's got an 80-foot yacht. Big money. Went to Boston College and all that other stuff. And I always grew up we started off very blue collar. In fact, I lived in Rochester. My father was a zone manager for Pontiac, you know, middle management kind of guy. 87, he had the opportunity of buying into a car dealership, went into hock up to Wazoo, you know, bought into the car dealership, and thankfully, you know, things paid off. But in 2005, I was like, wow, why is it that things are so good right now, and why hasn't it always been this way? Why are 20-year-old guys that I know making a ton more money than their parents that have been slaving away at these jobs all the time? How come they didn't get it? Why are we so smart? Why are we great? Why, what's so awesome about this? And I came down to the fact that I asked a simple question: what is money? And when I realized that money is debt, and that the more debt you create, the more money that we have in the system, and that if we paid off all the debt, there would be no money. Not there would be no physical money in the world. Okay?
We wouldn't pay off the debt, could we?
No. Because once you pay off the debt, you still have the interest that's still out there, and it doesn't exist. So that scared me. And then I was like, wow, no wonder I'm so rich, because I'm a car dealer and all I do is create debt. I mean, seriously, we would create millions of dollars worth of debt every month. Great months, we created a lot of debt. Bad months, we didn't create enough debt. But that's what we did. Because people weren't coming to me with, hey, here's 30 grand. You know, here's 30 grand of gold. Here's 30 grand of silver. No, they would say, hey, what's my lease payment? You know, and then as soon as that contract's created, I created money out of thin air.
Cyber money.
So once I realized that, well, that's the reason why we're doing so well, I said, well, what's the mathematical inevitability of this? At some point, it's going to blow. So I said, well, no wonder the economy's doing so good. Everybody's got the housing market. Because it wasn't just cars, it wasn't just, you know, iPads and stuff that people were charging on their credit cards. It wasn't McDonald's that's, you know, taking credit cards now. It's houses. I mean, what bigger asset than you get? And I saw people that I wouldn't sell a $5,000 used car to for 28% interest with $1,000 down, get $250,000 houses with no proof of anything. And I'm like, this is insane. Now we have too many buyers coming into a market who aren't qualified to even pee in that house, much less own it. And they're buying multiples now. Now they're real estate investors because they're, oh, I can get one loan. How about I get five and rent it to my neighbors and friends, and you know, I'm going to be a mega guy. So I said, I'm out. My wife was 7.5 months pregnant. Guys who were newly married, old married. Imagine telling your wife, you said, I'm selling the house. You're 7.5 months pregnant. I'm selling the house. We're going to rent. And I'm going to go buy some silver and gold. How many men, honestly, would be able to pull that off? I did.
Real men.
Well, not a matter of real men. And it came from my wife implicitly trusting me, knowing that I put a lot of thought and effort into this. And I spent a good amount of time talking to her about it. And she knew that I had our best interests in mind. Okay? So it's not just, you know, I'm a big guy, you know, all this other stuff. It's because I thought deeply about this. Okay? For the next 3 years, I thought deeply about waking up my friends and family. I did everything that I'm sure all you guys did. Ruined Christmas parties talking about 9/11, Federal Reserve, you know, cornering people over here. Do you know that the Federal Reserve is privately owned? And oh my God, you know, all this other stuff. And they're like, yeah, can I just have a beer, you know? But I went through my baby boomer partners and my baby boomer parents, and they did not want to hear me. And I spent 3 years burning every single relationship, pushing the issue, because I felt it was the most important issue out there. And for 3 years, my father placated me. He bought some silver just to shut me up. But at the end of the day, in 2008, he basically said, listen, I don't care. Because it came down to, there was a deal that they were going to buy. They were going to buy a half an acre of property next to our Infiniti dealership to build this parking garage. The property, I think, cost $1 million, and they were going to put $2 million into making a parking garage. And I said, this is fucking insane. I said, you guys are taking on all this debt and building all this, well, you know, all this, this stuff that they have, and for what? I said, I can't have any part of this. And here I am, a minority owner in, this is my inheritance. I'm the only son. My sister is a cop and has no interest in the business. And I said, you know what, guys? I want out. I said, you know, pay me whatever you want. I want out. And you know what I got? I got zero. Because they thought that they could say, hey, we're not going to give you anything, so you better just shut up and take it. And you know what I did? I walked away. I walked away from at least $3 million worth of wealth right there. Okay? I could not have done that had I not invested in silver. Okay? I could not have done that had I not invested in silver. That's one of the biggest things that I'm asking you guys to think about right now. Can you walk away from your paradigm when the paradigm collapses and you don't have something of real tangible value? Okay? We were talking earlier about, you know, oh, Chris, you bought it at $7. Good for you. I'm telling you, in 10, 15, 20 years, your generations are going to wonder why you didn't buy it at $31. It's insanely cheap. I mean, there's been $8 trillion since 2005 created just of the federal debt. Forget the derivatives. Forget the secret bailouts. Forget all that other stuff. I mean, the Federal Reserve, after the 2008 crisis, printed up $16 trillion and didn't even put it in the United States, Europe, Asia, wherever they want. Just money out of nowhere. Trillions of dollars, folks. And that's the real money. Forget the derivatives and the big Ponzi schemes that are built on top of it. You know what's after trillions? Quadrillions. It exists. The derivative market, when you take the over-the-counter and the shadow, is 1.3 quadrillion. I can't even begin to boggle that.
Can you explain that a little bit, the derivatives?
Derivatives are very simple. They're horse bets on stuff that they don't own. They had to overturn gambling laws to have derivatives created. Okay? So in order, mining stock. Somebody owns a mining stock. The basis of the wealth is the actual silver that's still in the ground. Okay, the next level up is the guy who owns the rights to get that. That's the mining company. Okay, so then you got the people who buy and share those shares. Okay, in order for a derivative to play, they say, "Hey, this mining share is worth $20. I'm going to bet that this share is going to go up in value. So I'm going to take I'm going to go long on it with a long dated call option." Okay. Another guy says, hey, I think it's going to go down. So I'll take that bet and we'll go down. The problem is the guys that are betting up and down have no equitable stake in the actual mining company. But when you realize that there's quadrillions in moving these monies back and forth, you start to realize it's all just a casino. And they literally had to overturn gambling laws to get this passed. And now it's been built into a quadrillion dollar thing out there. And there's no regulation either. There's not even a gambling commission overlooking this. That's how dangerous this is. Warren Buffett, financial weapons of mass destruction. That's what a derivative is. Okay?
So once the real thing goes, everything pops real fast.
Oh, yeah. Okay? Now, I don't tell people this to scare you. Okay? I tell you this to get real. Because the line that I came up with is when you're aware, you can prepare. Okay? If you're not aware, you can't prepare. You can't even begin to think about what to do, okay? I'm also a firm believer that as big as these problems are, the answers are very simple, okay? I spent a lot of time looking at all sorts of weird websites, Illuminati and Agenda 21, all these scary things and all these bad people out there trying to, manipulate us, and they got plans for us and they're going to, kill us all and all. And then I realized at the end of the day, how do they have power over me? And then I realized, how am I empowering them? And by our willingness to play along in this game, to take this illusion on, we're empowering these people. Every dollar of debt you take out, you make some banker rich. Okay? Every garbage food that you put in your body, you're making the medical industry rich. You're making the corporations that make that garbage food rich. The cancer that comes out of this. Okay? We empower them. They don't have power over us. So in this awakening process, I finally in 2008 said, hey, I'm out of here. And I walked away from my business, my inheritance, my job, trade. I mean, I only knew how to sell cars. I've been doing it since I was 17 years old. And I knew the car business was going to fall apart, so I knew I couldn't even go in there. And by the way, every time my wife gets pregnant, something dramatic happens. So wife got pregnant with the first thing. Hey, honey, we're selling the house. Wife got pregnant with the second kid. Hey, I'm leaving my business, my job, my home, my family, everything that we know, and we're leaving. How many guys can pull that off? Okay? But she trusted me implicitly. And it's because I've been batting 1,000 since I've been awake. And it all starts, and it's not because I'm some genius. It's because I get what's going on. And when you see what's going on has been happening over and over and over again, history right now is not linear. you know, in school they teach you, oh, we got this long chart, there was cavemen over here, and then there was some Roman Empire there, and then the British, and then you got the Indians over here, and then we're going on, guys. No, it's cyclical. It's cyclical. Every 80 years, we have a crisis that's coming around, okay? 80 years before where we are today. We're in a crisis period, folks. Whether you know it or not, people are going to look back and go, oh, my God, you were alive in 2012? What was it like? But that's what it's going to be like. Because 80 years before that, we had World War II and the Great Depression. There's no guarantee that the country was going to live. Capitalism is broken. The American dream was over. Depression for 12 years. Then we had this world war. Nazis and Japanese and communists and nukes. Like, where is this world going to go? And that got resolved. A paradigm established itself. And that's the paradigm we're living in now. And it was built on debt. Because now we have the United States. Our manufacturing was the only manufacturing untouched. We were the winning army. We had we created debt. We created the world control systems, the World Bank, the Bretton Woods Agreement, the, you know, the IMF, all these systems, the UN, all these systems to come out of this that we all control. That's the paradigm that we're in, and it's going to end, just like 80 years before that, 80 before the Great Depression, World War II. We had what? Civil War. There was no guarantee that the United States was going to live. It was cut in half. Brothers were killing brothers. The most bloodiest war we've ever had. Okay, 80 years before that, what do we have? Revolutionary War. We broke away from the most powerful empire in the world. There was no rhyme or reason why we should have been able to beat them, but we did. And if you go back even further than that, they had the War of the Roses in England and another crisis every 80 years. Okay, and the only reason why this cycle continues to happen is because of this debt and death. For the last 6,000 years, that's all we've had is debt and death. You get some psychopath that wants to be in charge. What does he do? He goes off to war, gets in charge, puts everybody in debt underneath him, so his life is propped up. So we get all these big guys over there fighting over who's going to have their little guys pay them. Okay? Right now, we're the biggest king on the block. We've dominated the world, our corporations, our military, our financial markets. We have the whole world working for our existence right now. We're 5% of the world taking 25% of the world's oil. You think that's realistic in a real world? Like, could you go to your neighbors and say, hey, give me 25% of your stuff so I can live 5 times better than everybody else? But we can do that because we have, yeah, we have the institutions, we have the propaganda with the media, we have the military, we have the all these systems that are all built upon debt. You know, everybody wonders why we went to war with Iraq. It wasn't because Iraq was in weapons of mass destruction. It's because Saddam Hussein wanted to sell oil for euros. He was a smart man for doing that. Good for him. Boom. As soon as he did that. Like, you guys may not remember, we put Saddam in power. We funded him against the Iranians for 8 years.
Hung out with him.
You know, I got a video of Rumsfeld. Hey, dude.
We sold him the weapon.
Yeah, sold him the weapon. The reason why they knew weapons of mass destruction, because they sold it to them. You know, but unfortunately, chemical agents go bad after a while, and they have to get rid of them, so that's why they're not around. But we went after it for oil. Gaddafi, in power for 41 years, right? Okay. What was he trying to do? He was trying to sell oil for the new African dinar.
Dinar,
yeah. So what are we going to do? Boom, we're going to waste this guy. You know, and I was one of these neoconservative, voted for Bush twice in the Marine Corps. I was going to go waste some Afghanis, you know, after 9/11. And for me to wake up and realize, wow, you know, Libya is a country where there was no debt. Young people got married. They got $40,000 from the state. Somebody wanted to go work land.
Sovereign banking.
Yeah, sovereign banking. Somebody wants to go work land. We'll give you the land, give you the seed, give you the fuel, and you just have to split some of the profits with us. Pretty cool, right? And they were one of the world's largest holders of gold. And he was going to work on this, the eighth wonder of the world, where in Libya they have, and you can look this up because this is kind of new to me too. There's tons of fresh water underneath Libya, underneath the deserts. And they had this $30 billion project to take the water that's under there and aerate Libya. And it was originally designed by I don't think it was Halliburton, but one of those type big contractors. And as soon as Gaddafi switched the contract over to some South Korean thing, all of a sudden, you know, he's a bad guy again. One of the reasons why the Lockerbie bombers got out is because of what? England won oil contracts with them. It's all about oil. So why are we going to war with Iran? Is it about their nuclear power plants? Because on 2008, they opened up a oil bourse on the island of Kish, and they're selling oil for not just dollars, any currency but the dollar. They're terrorists, okay? And you know why they're terrorists? Because they threaten our way of life. They threaten the petrodollar. The petrodollar is basically the... there's so many facets of this stuff. And I talk about it like it's the back of my hand. The oil crisis, you know, who's alive back then? 73, 75, you guys remember oil lines, all this other stuff. Totally planned. It had nothing to do with the Arabs. Henry Kissinger, Bilderbergs, said, hey, we need to, Nixon took us off the international gold standard in 71. We need something back in the dollar, or else the whole thing's going to fall apart. Okay? So the only way that they could do that is to say, hey, everybody needs oil. It is the most important resource in the world. England and America have the largest oil companies. We have the biggest militaries. We have the biggest markets. And this is our weak point. This is our Achilles heel in the back. So why don't we concoct a scheme where the Arabs are pissed off because we're supporting Israel, and they jack up the price 400%. Okay? So if, for all you guys that remember the baby boomers and older, it seems kind of weird that, you know, here's Saudi Arabia and all these Arab nations are calling us the great Satan. And yes, every single dollar that they made, they put into our institutions. They bought our treasury bills, invested in on Wall Street, came to Vegas and gambled. Seemed kind of stupid back then, right? But that's not the way we're selling us. It's always, look at over here, but this is what's really going on. So our entire way of life is built around this petrodollar. That's why we go to war. The same war that's going on for oil, Iran, you know, all these things, is the same thing that's going on for silver right now. Silver is just as big as a threat as the petrodollar is. It is the Achilles heel, okay? Because it's a small amount of wealth that's out there, and it can't be messed with. Real tangible value cannot be messed with, okay? So right now, we're in the process of one paradigm dying. It has to die, folks. This is not a question. I've staked my life upon this, okay? Staked my kid's life upon this because I believe in this so passionately, okay? This paradigm is going to end. This country club, like your ability to go to McDonald's and go get fast food and have free Wi-Fi and that whole world ends. We're going to start living a more harder, realer, more thoughtful way of life, okay? When this happens, let me talk about the five stages of awakening because I think that's an important thing to go through. As you're starting to come to all this new realities that are out there, you start to become a little bit more depressed. You start to go, oh, shit, this kind of really sucks. Like, it's not fun, okay? And as I was going through my process of learning and digging up all this stuff that I had held true and challenging it, I started to feel myself. I'm like, God, I feel like dying. Like, this sucks. I mean, here I was, super, like, you couldn't, 31 years old, millionaire, okay? Literally living the life. And not only that, I was hard charging Marine. I was in the infantry for 7 years, okay? And here I was staking my life. And now I got to say, hey, I'm where everybody else in the world wants to be. And I realize it's all false. And I have to leave it. I have to leave this dream that I'm leaving in order to save my life, my kid's life, and do something about that, okay? So as I was going through this, I came across Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. If anybody's had a death in the family, dog, parent, or whatever, you guys know about the five stages of death or the five stages of grieving. And it starts with denial, okay? Then you have anger. Then there's bargaining. Then there's depression. And there's finally acceptance, okay? So all that's doing is quantifying what it takes for you, for the human psyche, the human heart, the human being to come to terms with a new reality. Okay, we all know it as somebody dying. You know, your wife, spouse, somebody's no longer there. That's a hard reality to come to terms with. And the body naturally goes through these five stages. And it's, you cannot skip them, can't do them in reverse order. They are what they are, and that's the way it is, okay? Well, what you will be going through as you start to say, hey, something's wrong with this world, and I need to look into this, and you start learning more things, and you're like, is really everything, you know, a lie? I mean, literally everything's a lie. It is. It's an illusion.
All the world's a stage.
And when you start to realize it's not just the dollar, it's not finances, it's not the military, it's the media, it's the even the food. Jeez, I mean, I know two friends, 35 years old, that got cancer. When you get older, guys grew up,
Did you ever even hear of cancer with older people? No. Like 50 years ago, it wasn't as prevalent as it is. Now I got, the guy I just was working for is 35 years old, he's got 3 kids, pancreatic cancer. Okay? And it's because of the garbage food that we're eating, folks. You know, one of the aha moments was this mother who was so concerned about her daughter's drinking Diet Coke by the liter that she bought 4 rats, put 2 of them in one cage, 2 in the other, gave the 1 rat's carrots, lettuce, water bottle, gave the other ones carrots, lettuce, and Diet Coke. Within 2 weeks, the rats that had the Diet Coke gave up food for more Diet Coke, and within 4 weeks, they all had tumors and died. Okay? It's poison, folks. That's right. Donald Rumsfeld, we can thank him for bringing that on. So many different aspects, and I cover all of this. If you haven't been through any of my stuff, start with the Sons of Liberty Academy. It's free. It's 48 hours of video lessons of me talking. All right? Everybody goes, oh my God, 48 hours. Trust me, folks, it'll save you so much time, angst, research and money. I probably spent $4,000 just on the reading material.
What's your motivation?
It's sick to me that we live the way that we do. Absolutely. It's so sick, folks. We wouldn't do this to our own best friends, right? So why is a society, why is humanity, do we empower this? Like, history, can't we live better than this?
History repeats itself.
Yeah, but history repeats itself because we remain ignorant to the power that we have, and we empower those that do get it. Because trust me, folks, the guys that are running this game, they know damn well what they're doing. You know, most of the things that the guys in power in banking, the military, corporations, anywhere, do you know what they spend the most time on? Marketing. Marketing. How are we going to sell it to you? How are we going to sell the war? How are we going to sell the car? How are we going to sell this food? How are we going to sell this TV show? It's all about selling a lie to you. Okay? And once we realize, man, this is a lie, they're worthless, you know? Once we reject it, they have no power over us. You know, I mentioned before, I looked at all this crazy shit. To me, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, they're about as high and as powerful as they're going to get. These guys own the world's central banks. They control the militaries, the corporations, all the other banks, the politicians. These guys own the world, folks, okay? And yet, you look at David Rockefeller, who's probably been the mind behind it. Brilliant man, just a psychopath, out for himself, wants to empower himself and put others down. But you know what? He's a 92-year-old guy in a wheelchair. Most powerful man in the world is a 92-year-old guy in a wheelchair who probably has 4 bodyguards, 3 secretaries, you know, teams of financial accountants, probably doesn't even know what an ATM is, okay? And yet all of us in our own daily lives have to go through so many challenges, and we don't realize how strong we are to be even modestly successful in this world. Mm-hmm. You know, David Rockefeller doesn't have to work for a boss that he may not like or do a job that he may not like. He doesn't have to worry about getting divorced and having half of his wealth taken away or a wife with child custody or any of that. He doesn't have to worry about taxes. He doesn't have to worry about if he goes 10 miles over the speed limit and some cop does something to him. Okay? There's 2 sets of justice. We get the hard and heavy hand, and yet guys like John Corzine, I stole $1 billion, go ahead. You know? Dances in front of Congress. I don't remember. You try going in front of the judge, you know, if you got a joint and go in front of a judge and goes, I don't remember. Boom! 10 grand fine, 30 days in jail. Corzine gets up there. I have no recollection. $1 billion. He's walking. So when you go through this awakening stage, it's important for you to understand what those 5 stages are, that you are going to go through it. There's no way around it. You can go through it quickly, which is what I think my academy helps people do. Because once all this information is put into your face, can't deny it. You can try challenging it. And that's good. I encourage everybody to challenge everything that I put in there. You know, I'm not saying I have it 100% right. But I'm probably 99% right. Okay. But once you go through this awakening, you go through the sense of your old self dying. Your immature, narcissistic, short-term thinking person self is dying. Because that's what we've been designed to do. We've been designed to become
you know, instant gratification people. That's what works in this world today. Those that can provide the most instant gratification, debt, my case with cars, you know, video games, all this other, whoever can provide the most instant gratification is the one that are making the most money. Doesn't pay to think long term right now. Doesn't. Okay? But as you realize your old self is dying, by the way, I had a whole speech written and scripted. And if I didn't have a daddy-daughter dance to go to at 6:30 in Ohio, I probably would be talking for 8 hours, no script. So, but as you go through this process, you realize that old self is dying. And you start feeling bad and feeling guilty of all the opportunities that you wasted. All the people that tried to reach out to you and wake you up that you didn't listen to. What you could have done. What you should have done. Okay. And you really start getting down on yourself. You're like, man. And then you get pissed off. Like, I sacrificed so much for this lie that I don't even know what to do. I'm pissed. I want somebody to burn for this. You know? Think we went off to war. We've killed 1 million Iraqis.
Always.
Dumped the depleted uranium. Do you guys know what depleted uranium does to people? I mean,
to our own troops.
Yeah. I mean, this stuff's, besides the fact being on the receiving end of these things, you know, just having it lay there, it doesn't go away, okay? Besides the fact that we're stealing all the resources from these people, besides the fact that we've instilled fear, you know, we have 28 million Americans on antidepressants right now, okay? What do we really have to worry about being depressed about, okay? Have you had armies coming in, blowing up your neighbors, seeing your kids die, having your wealth extricated, living under a tyranny of one and then having another one come in, you know? That's what it ultimately comes down to. We all feel like we're dying. We do. Because we're like, we're on this life. And like, this is it. This is what I work for. Like, even, like, you know, even me. I had a very short gap. I went from college to, you know, 10 years. And I'm rolling in it, you know. Buying fancy watches. Got nice suits. Going out to fancy dinners and stuff like that. But when you get to anywhere where you think that's it, you're like, shit, that's it. Is this what it's really all about? You know, I like Kurt Cobain from Nirvana, okay? To me, being a rock star has got to be the greatest job in the world. It's the ultimate form of individuality. It's the ultimate form of expression. You resonate with people. People get you. You know, all that other stuff. And here's Kurt Cobain, you know? Because he got to some point in his life and he's like, yeah, this is it. I feel a black hole in my life. That's because he had no purpose, okay? You know, people, you know, flock to religions because they want to live forever. They want to, you know, live a harmonious life with the world, okay? You can live through forever by being something, you know, permanent in this life, passing knowledge and love and wealth onto other generations. And what have we done? Shit, we're putting our old people in housing. We don't even take care of them. They're not even respected anymore, okay? And if you know that eventually, you're instilling that same values in your kids. You're going to be the one that's, you know, on the feeding tube with no kids around and dying. Okay? This isn't something that resonates with us. This isn't natural to us. But this is the world that's been forced upon us. And we've been playing along with it. And we can change it. If you're going to take away one thing from all this, all of our problems start and stop with us. Every single problem that you have is your fault. Every single answer that you need is in you, okay? That is the most powerful thing that I found, because you can spend hundreds of hours, thousands of hours, years going through the internet, learning about all these weird things and stuff like that. Forget about it. You can't control if there's, you know, Fukushima, you know, things, terrorists, you know, all these things. Concentrate on what you can control. You can't even control... I use this line. I go, we all think that we're going to somehow go change the world, okay? We've been brought up with this mentality that let's get an idea together. Let's all get together, and we're going to go out and tell everybody that we're right, okay? That's part of the problem, folks, okay? Because you have 7 billion people who think that they're right, but not 7 billion people have all the same information. Okay? I can tell you what, if you guys went through my academy and done all this other stuff, you'd realize that it's insane to try to instill your thoughts, your values, your ideas onto somebody else. Because you push me, I'm going to push you back. I don't care how right you are. Okay? My wife tried to get me to get off sweet and low on my coffee. I would drink 2 packs a day with coffee, guzzle that stuff down. She's like, that stuff causes cancer. Oh, well. But it wasn't until somebody else that I realized, I'm like, oh, my God, that causes cancer. My wife told me that. And then I looked into it, and I said, honey, do you know that normal milk's got these hormones that they put in there, and it's causing girls as young as 10 years old to have their periods? And it's probably causing breast cancer and stuff like that? I know. You've been drinking organic milk for the last 10 years that I've known you. Oh, thanks. Okay. People have to wake up themselves, okay? So if you're going to go out and try to wake people up by, you know, the Federal Reserve is privately owned and, you know, 9/11, you're wasting your time. Wasting your time. And you know what? It'll end up making you depressed. Okay? So you go through this anger stage where you're pissed off at the world. You want to hang bankers. You want to do all sorts of negative stuff. And you realize that's not going to solve anything. If anything, it's going to add to the problem. Okay? Our solutions rely on the opposite consciousness. We have to do the opposite. If war is the problem, love is the answer. If debt is the problem, equity, real tangible assets are the answer. If the problem is everybody trying to push ideas on you, the answer is to walk away. And that's what you have to do. Ultimately, all of you need to walk away from your old self. And you're going to feel like you're dying. And you're going to go through these 5 stages. Okay? After you get through the anger stage, bargaining is next. That is the most annoying part of the awakening. Because that's when you do corner your friends, ruin Christmas parties, you know, picnics and all this other stuff. You know, turn off people by sending them constant emails of all the crap that's going on in the world that you see. And you're like, oh my God, you know, how do you not stop everything? How can you watch American Idol? How can you watch sports? How can you even live without seeing what I see? Okay? And that's, you have to understand that you're reaching to 99% of the world that's in the denial stage. You ever tried to deal with an alcoholic? Okay? These people, all of humanity is drunk on this paradigm. Okay? When do alcoholics wake up? Is it the interventions? Is it the, you know, the love, the threats, the bribes to sober up? No. 90% of them, most of them, only wake up when they hit rock bottom. And you know what rock bottom is? It's the consequences of the actions that they have done. All of humanity has not come to the consequences of all the things that we've passively or actively done to this world. Okay? And it's coming. Because when this debt-based paradigm comes to its ultimate end, and that enough people walk away from the system, it's coming. And it's going to be a very hard reality. And it's not something I'm looking forward to. I'm not going to tell you that this is going to be, you know, we're all going to be, you know, mega rich and be absolved of all of the sins out there. Okay? But we can prepare for this and take positive personal action that I think individually we can all do so that we can be a blessing onto all those people who didn't listen to us. And I think it's imperative for you not only to stop trying to push your ideas onto other people, because it's not the right consciousness. Okay? You got to Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party. What is that? That's conflict. Okay? I asked a question to Ron Paul, or I had somebody ask a question to Ron Paul, saying that, you know, Albert Einstein's quote, and I always mess it up, but essentially that you cannot solve a problem with the same consciousness that created the problem. You have to see the world anew. And I had heard that many times. Just, you know, another one of those voices. You know, somebody told me that, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. You know, go on playing video games or whatever. But the reality is, that is where all of our answers are. It's in the opposite consciousness, and on every level. There is no collective answer to this. You can't have a collective go fight a collective because it's two of the same consciousness. It's a collective, not an individual, and it's war against somebody else or ideas or being aggressive against them, and not peace. Yep. So the answer is individual, peace, equity, love, understanding, not putting people down, you know, doing all that other stuff. So you get through the bargaining stage. What's next, folks? Depression. Because that's when you start going, nobody knows, nobody cares, the problems are too big, I have no friends, I have no hope, I have nowhere to go, and I can't go back. You can't unthink the thoughts that you thought now. You can't undo the reality. you know, everybody's, mostly younger people, have seen The Matrix, okay? Cypher is one of the guys that was got out of The Matrix, saw how ugly the world is, and he took the pill to go back inside so that he goes, I know this is fake, but man, it's good. I would love to go back to my, you know, millionaire, 31-year-old, jet-setting car dealer son life, okay? That would be a lot easier for me. It'd be actually easier for me to even go up to Montana and get a log cabin and sit on top of a hill. It's not resonating with me. Okay? I don't want to, you know, create my own little world and not talk to anybody. That's one of the main reasons why I'm doing this. Because I know I'm not the only one out there. And by me expressing and not trying to corner people, just putting information out there, somehow all you guys are finding it out. And you know what? You're going to somehow find out all these other people. And then when we all wake up, we're like, man, we actually have something pretty cool going on here. Okay? At that point, you start seeing a way out. And that's only when the acceptance stage comes. Because once you hit acceptance, you can say, hey, what's coming sucks. Just like my mother dying, that sucked. My dog dying, that sucked. But the reality is they're not here anymore. And I can go out and maybe do something in their memory. Do something right. Maybe, you know, say your mom was pestering you to go out and, you know, be a guitarist and you went to being a doctor or whatever the thing. You know, chase your passion. You have the opportunity then to take positive steps forward in doing something positive. And it's only then you can get rid of the depression. And it's only then when you start realizing, hey, I got to work on me. I don't care about the rest of the world. I don't even care about my neighbors. Okay? Because you know what the best way of spreading ideas? Walking away and walking it peacefully. And walking it so much so that people go, what is that guy got going on? Okay? Who's the religious guys that knock on the door?
Jehovah
Witness. They've got to be the worst spreading religion ever. And you know why? They push people. Okay? I don't know what they believe in. They may have the answer. I don't know. But they don't have the right answer. You can't push people into it. You look at the major religions that have spread, Jesus, Buddha. What did they do? Did Jesus go inside and say, hey, you guys are all wrong. Walk my way. No. He talked to everybody and talked to them as their brothers and sisters and loved them and took care of them and led an example and walked a different path. And you know what? He had disciples. And they followed him. Jesus didn't go, hey, John, guess what? I'm Jesus. I'm the son. You know, you gotta do everything I say. No, they saw that he walked a different path. Look at Buddha. You know, I started looking into Buddhism. Buddha was a rich son. You know, he had harems of women. He had all sorts of things going on. He lived a good life. Okay? And it was only when he left the castle walls that he was brought up in that he saw, I'm going to mess this up, but he saw hungry people for the first time. And he wondered why they were hungry. And he saw somebody sick and wondered why they were sick. This was completely weird to him because in his bubble world, it didn't exist. And he saw somebody dead. And then he's like, God, you know, what is this existence all about? But I'm not a Buddhist. I don't even consider myself a Catholic anymore. I believe that there is a truth at the bottom of all these religions. You know, you can't tell me one out of the 40,000 denominations of Christianity have the one right answer and all those other 39,000 are wrong, okay? To me, religion is just a form of man controlling another man. It's the oldest form of control that there is. And you cannot honestly look back through at any religious history that there's some one guy who created his own little top-down pyramid that he's got secret answers and secret levels and all this other stuff, okay? But at the bottom of all these religions, it's the same thing. It really is. It's, you know, love your neighbor as yourself and, you know, work with the other people and be harmonious. And that's truth. So one guy said, you know, it's religions like, you know, all these very bright, wise men touching different parts of the elephant and describing what they feel and see. You know, so one guy may have the trunk and say, hey, you know, this big thing out there is got a nose, and then another one's going, hey, this one's got a leg, and this one's got a tail, and you know, all this other stuff. And the reality is, they're just trying to interpret what they see. So maybe at the end of it, it's the elephant is love, is, you know, being harmonious. And I think that once you see that all the problems start and stop with yourself and that you can take positive action in your life, people will start seeing, man, this guy's no longer crazy anymore. You know? He's actually got something going on. You know? He called it. He told me that this was going to happen. What has he got going on? That's the point when the denial that they're in ends and they become curious. Okay? So maybe I'll get to some parts of what I was going to talk about.
Are you going to, I don't mean to interrupt at all, are you going to talk about you know, the future and ultimately get to a point of where we can go from here?
Yeah. All right, I'll finish up with that. All right. So once you realize that you were the master or damnation, you know, the salvation or damnation of your life, and you can start taking positive action in your life, people will start saying that, you know, this guy's got going on. What I find interesting is that when we all individually empower ourselves, individually, you guys are awesome. Seriously, awesome. Because you're no longer running from something, you're running towards something, and that makes you strong. Okay, I give the analogy. You know, I was a huge Ron Paul supporter, great guy. You know, founding father material, brought into the lexicon of honest money and the Constitution. You know, non-intervention, like kind of basic things that we should be doing that our country used to do, and we've gone horribly in the wrong direction. But I asked this one question through a guy that was out in California. I said, you know. You cannot solve a problem with the same consciousness that created the problem. You have to see the world anew. And the question was, do you think that it's wise for all of us to work inside the system, legitimizing it, using all of our time, talents, and resources, pushing for a collective solution so that we can enforce our will upon other people? Or would Ron's time be better spent saying, hey, the game's never going to change. It's going to end by itself, and that the most powerful thing that we can do is walk away from the system. You know, Alexander Haig has this quote that said, so long as they pay their taxes, let them march all they want. They get it. The guys that control us, they get it. As long as we're paying our taxes, do you think they give a shit how many millions of people march on Washington? No! Because I tell you what, while they're marching on Washington complaining about it, they're probably checking their E-Trade account going, wow, the stock market didn't do so good today, and oh, I gotta pay the tax bill, and let's go eat some McDonald's, and let's drive our Suburban home the long way. You know, like, you're every single one of those steps, you're empowering the guys that are seeking to enslave you. Okay? So until you start walking away, and the easiest thing to do is take your money out of Wall Street. And everybody bitches about Goldman Sachs and you got your money in a bank somewhere. You own a stock somewhere. You're empowering those guys. And they don't even make it off the stock trade just because it's sitting in their thing. They're trading derivatives and, you know, all this other crazy shit around it. And all they're doing is thinking short term, what their bonus is, what they can make the most money, and keeping the system going and selling the lie to you guys. E-Trade baby. That's what they really think about us. They think we're E-Trade babies. And we are. We're E-Trade babies. Admit it. But the problem is that I don't think that most people want to take on the responsibility of becoming independent. It's hard. It's not easy, folks. It sucks mentally. It sucks physically. It's not easy. But it's the only thing I can think worth doing. And when you become independent, that is, to me, generational wealth. The knowledge that you are creating right now in your mind, formulating, categorizing, that's generational wealth that you can pass on to your other kids. You want to live forever? Impact somebody's life positively so that their lives are changed forever. I can't tell you how many emails I get from people going, dude, you rocked my world, or you saved my life. I had a military contractor in Afghanistan early on, probably a month after I opened up the Sons of Liberty Academy, contacted me by Skype. He said, can I talk to you? Ask me a couple questions. And I'm like, you're in Afghanistan? And I'm like, did you guys already find me? Like, you know, I was still in that kind of paranoia mode, like the government's watching all my emails and stuff. And, you know, I answered all of his questions as honest as I could, as bold as I could. And 2 weeks later, he wrote back to me. He says, I want to let you know that you saved my life. He says, I did not realize that I was actively murdering, raping the country of all these natural assets. He says, I'm a military contractor. I've been here for 6 months. I've made a ton of tax-free money, and I can't live another day here with the existence that I know now. He says, I'm empowering those that would seek to enslave the world with debt and death, and I'm part of it. He left Afghanistan with another buddy. Two guys quit because of what they saw in the academy. And he said, before I leave, I'm leaving this website for everybody else there. And he says, I know seven other guys that have asked me questions about it afterwards. That's you walking away from the system. That's you empowering. That's you being the change that you want to see in the world. Okay? Do you want to see your kids living some corporate job, being moved all over the place like I was? I lived in 15 states before I was like 15 years old. Okay? We empower corporations to destroy the local family. I mean, before the 50s, nobody left their hometown. And that's why we had strong families. That's why we had strong communities. That's why we had, you know, left the doors unlocked. Okay? Now that we've empowered the corporations, which I'm sure most of you guys are working for because that's where all the jobs are. But when we empower the corporations, they purposely uproot people. Okay? Not to make them more benefit, not to make them more efficient in doing what they're doing, but to make them dependent upon the corporation and the guys above you. Okay? And all that does is weaken all of us. So the opposite consciousness is back home, folks. And that's what's coming one way or the other. When this paradigm collapses, we're going to have a much more local, slower, purposeful life. Okay? So now I'm going to get to the ugly part, the scary part. The collapse is going to happen. What is it going to look like? It's going to be bad. You know, civil war, world war, plague, starvation, Wrath of Khan type stuff, it's coming. Is it going to be equally bad everywhere? No. Okay? Michigan, out here, relatively safe. Cleveland, where I am, relatively safe. Where I was in New Jersey, wouldn't want to be there with the rest of my life. You know, 20 million people packed into a local area, totally dependent upon a dollar paradigm, totally dependent on energy and food being imported. And the really scary thing is that 28 million Americans that I talked about are that are on antidepressants. Forget about the food and fuel that's going to get cut off in a week if there's no money system going. Think about the 28 million Americans that aren't going to get their happy pills. When the world is falling apart. When there is starvation. Okay? Hold on. If you ever see these school shootings, the mother that drowned her five kids, it's because they came off these drugs too quick. Okay? It causes psychotic breaks from reality, you know, even in their own ads, if you have thoughts of suicide or homicide. Pretty powerful stuff. Okay? And the chances are, if you're on that stuff, and I don't want to see any hands because I know there are here, if you're on that stuff, it's probably because you're trying not to deal with a pain in your past. Okay? Hurt people hurt people. We've all been hurt somewhere along the line. Okay? And that is part of our problem as a society. Because when you deny a pain, that's the beginning of all mental illness. The only way, trust me, I went through a lot of pain going through this. You don't leave your family. You don't leave your... I went through some serious depression. Because the moment that I walked away from my family, all my wealth was in silver. Guess what? Silver went from $21 to $8. In the time period that I said, F you to my parents, I'm out of here, to the time that I moved in, with a new baby, two new car payments that I never had to pay for, a new mortgage that I didn't have to pay for, no health insurance, I was hurting. And I went to a therapist, went through there, first thing out of my mouth, have you ever tried doing drugs? It'll help stabilize you so you can work through your pain. Okay? And I said, no, I'm going to deal with this. And it sucked. And the only answer is you have to start going out and doing something productive with your life. Make a change in other people's lives. And as silver is going down, I'm like, God, I could not have been this wrong about it. There's no way. So this, they've got way too many fundamentals. You know, all the stuff I put in the if you haven't seen this video series called The Silver Bullet and the Silver Shield, 5 hours worth of reasons why you should be buying silver. Okay? 5 hours. I couldn't even get Steve Jobs when he was alive to talk 5 hours of why you should buy Apple stock. Because it would basically go like this. Well, we make expensive laptops, expensive phones, and we got new ones coming out every year. Like, what more, you know, do you want to talk about? But silver has so many different aspects to it. It's not the financial. It's the historical. It's the geological. It's the spiritual. It's the, you know, the historical. There's so many reasons why you should be buying it. And it's the antiseptic to everything that's going on. It's of the opposite consciousness. So in order to work my way out of depression, I had to quantify all the stuff that I had because I just jumped off the boat that I was on. And I was like, this isn't the end of me. I said, I know I'm right. I just haven't found the magic way of doing it. And through this process, this is all the information I'm sharing with you. Okay? You guys are getting the Cliff Notes version. Not even, you're getting like the speed reading, you know, in the Matrix, you know, oh, I know, you know, ninjutsu now. You know, that's really what all this stuff is doing. And I said, you know what, how can I go about positively doing that? So I started off at the Academy. Okay? Who's done PowerPoint presentations? Okay? What's the longest one that you guys have ever done?
2 hours.
No, how many slides?
20.
Okay. The one I put together for this Academy, 1,776 PowerPoint slides.
Wow.
And then I redid it and put another 100 on. Okay? But that is decoding everything that is going on in this world and how it all works together. And it took me years. I read 240 books. Like, who's actually read, like, a nonfiction book lately? You know? I saw in 1984, like, that to me counts as nonfiction because it's the reality we're living. But I read 240 books preparing that. And it wasn't like I was trying to indoctrinate myself into some line of thinking so I can go, okay, this is the new God that I'm going to bow to. I was rejecting everything. I was trying to find fault in all these things. And that's when I took pieces out of this book and pieces out of this book. And I also hated the fact that I would read a 300-page book and only find 2 lines worth underlining.
Yeah.
You know?
Tragedy and hope.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you're like, they're talking in circles about this one thing, and okay, I get it. Like, there's not much meat there. There's no mental fireworks. So in the Academy, I took all my mental fireworks, and I said, boom, I'm going to put it in the order the way I wish I had learned it. Okay? So I created this whole big Academy, and I said, okay, world, here it is. Anybody? This is really powerful stuff. Changed my life. Tell the world works. So I said, you know what? And I was charging money for it. Well, I wasn't being of the opposite consciousness. Because I came from, when I left the car business, I went to go work for an internet marketer. I had no idea what a hyperlink was on an email. I didn't have an email account before I moved out in New Jersey 3 years ago. So if you want to talk about somebody who's completely computer illiterate, that was me 3 years ago. And now I'm making videos and I'm all cool and all that other stuff. When I went to go work for an internet marketer, and he was basically helping people invest in foreclosed properties. I'm like, well, that's definitely gonna be a growth business. I'll help you out, you know, because we're gonna have a lot of foreclosed properties over the next couple of years that we're going through. But the real thing I took away from it was that he was selling information, and I was like, okay, I think I can do that. And this dude made $5 million selling ebooks and, you know, all this other stuff. So I figured, well, my information's got to be 1,000 times more important, and you know, can I make, you know, $500 million doing this? So I made the of the same consciousness, my car dealer mentality, my shark. You have to realize I grew up a shark. Okay, I was one of the guys that would, you know, I had employees from a very young age. I was a manager at 22 years old. Okay, that's why I know so much about this. I was the of that mentality. My father. People called him Darth Vader. Not to his face, but they called him Darth Vader. Always drive a black car. He's got silver hair, black suits. Very, very imposing guy. Okay. Most people that I know, even other dealers, were intimidated by my father. Okay. And that's one of the things that I stopped doing. I stopped looking for bad guys and good guys. Okay. Because every powerful person that I've ever known is the most scared person that I know. Every single powerful person I know is the one that's running scared. Okay, so when you stop thinking that, oh, this guy's so powerful, he's just a dude, and trust me, he's got more issues than you can deal with. Okay, you are much more powerful You're the one with the healthy relationship. You're the one that doesn't have to force people to work with you. You're the one that doesn't have to pay people to work with you. You're the one that don't have to have power struggles and bribes for people to love you. Okay? You are more powerful. I kind of got off track there. So this collapse scenario that I see happening is going to happen. I don't know what's going to tip it off. I can tell you what the heart of it will be. It'll be something real. It's not going to be a failed bond auction. It's not going to be a presidential election. It's not going to be some, you know, executive order. It's going to be something real. It's going to be oil being cut off. It's going to be a silver shortage. It's going to be food not getting delivered. It's going to be real people walking away from the system and things coming off the tracks and the progressive nature of it. And it's not going to, I don't think it's going to happen overnight. It's going to be a stumbling, catastrophic, oh my God, well, this is going on. And there'll be news today that would be in the headlines for a month that would last an hour on the internet, because more history is going to be written in the few weeks that this, whenever it is started, more history will be written in the first few weeks after this collapse than probably last 80 years. Because everything is being held together on this illusion. And when this illusion comes off the tracks, what do you think is going to happen? You know, all these things of people being nice to each other, all of a sudden, people become desperate. So what's going to happen? You're going to have a collapse, and you're going to see a lot of crazy stuff. And the way I look at it is that there's going to be, you know, two general impacts that's going to happen. Urban areas, going to be a mess. You know, Hurricane Katrina. Had a hurricane, 7 days without really power, food, and energy, and you saw the kind of crazy stuff that happened. And yet, in the back of all those people's mind, they knew somebody was going to come save them at some point. In fact, they were surprised that it didn't take as long as it did. They knew somebody was going to come save them. Okay? But what's going to happen when the whole world has a Hurricane Katrina and no one's coming to save you?
Did you realize it?
And how utterly unprepared they are. So I look at urban areas as people who are most dependent upon this paradigm working. Okay? Manhattan got all these really rich people in these big penthouse apartments, but their whole way of life is dependent upon this dollar paradigm. Their income, their taxes, their food, their energy, their security, everything is dependent upon that. Okay? So you're going to have, and I'm a firm believer that the closer you are to the city, the more narcissists, the more psychopaths, the more people who would cut in front of you, steal your chair, do this, all this stuff, they live there because that's where they thrive. You know, you want to be a financial shark, you go to Manhattan. I knew all those 20-year-old brokers that would show up in their $3,000 suits and, you know, go sell, some stock to somebody, okay? My brother-in-law's brother did 2 years in jail for insider trading, 2 years younger than me. But, man, when he was there, he was the coolest cat I had ever met. I mean, he'd be buying us drinks. We went to these lounges where they had $1,000 bottles of vodka. And the women there were beautiful and great party and limos and everything else. And I was like, man, this guy's got it going on. And I come to find out, well, it's because he's been thieving. Okay? So in these urban areas, I think that when this collapse happens, not only are all those people unprepared. I mean, the average person in New York does not have any food in their house. They do takeout. Okay? What are they going to do the day that the food stops coming around? It's going to be bad. I mean, I moved my family. I was in the wealthiest town in Summit, New Jersey. Look it up. There's more bankers that live inside Summit, New Jersey. In fact, John Corzine lived there. His estate was worth, I don't know, $400 billion when he was the governor. Okay, he didn't make the top 20 richest people in Summit. Or $400 million. He didn't make the top 20 richest people in Summit. I mean, really, really wealthy people. I've seen and met these people. I sold $55,000 Grand Cherokee Overlands to the nanny just so that they could have a nice car to drop their kids off at the $25,000 kindergarten. Okay? I'm big money out there. But I also know these people don't have a clue about what's going on because they're bought and paid for. Their job and their life depends on them not seeing it. Because I tell you what, once you see what I see and what you'll end up seeing, you can't continue to lie to yourself. It's difficult to work in both worlds, you know? And you have to. Because you have to extract your wealth out of this world, but you got to be stockpiling it into this next paradigm. So when the collapse happens, Well, I think all urban areas are going to be a mess. Okay? And I don't think so. I think it's going to be Mad Max or 1984 if you're in an urban area. Southern California to me, Mad Max. Miami, Mad Max.
I live in L.A., and after I found out about this, I left.
Yeah. Good move. But I think northern cities, you know, Detroit, aren't we already Mad Max? You know, almost. But I think cities like Chicago, New York, Boston, they'll be 1984. You got guys like Mike Bloomberg and Rahm Emanuel. What are they going to do? They're going to police state the place.
Absolutely.
They'll get control.
It's already
a police state. Yeah. That's because they know what's coming. I mean, this isn't...
Yeah, they're bench tested.
Yeah. And you know what? Half the population will want it because they don't want to be afraid of the people who are starving. They want their government cards. But I also think the majority of the land mass of the United States will not be going through this. Okay? Yeah, we're going to get all of our wealth ripped off. Yeah, our neighbors are going to be pissed off. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of upset people. I think there's going to be a lot of people who are physically aren't going to be able to deal with this and take their lives or drink themselves to death, because that's what happened in Russia. You know, I mean, the cities were gangs. On the outskirts, people drank themselves to death. Okay? But if you guys all saw what was coming and prepared, you guys all can be blessings to people who are now very willing to listen. And that's where I think the responsibility comes on to all of you guys, to stop worrying about things you can't control and worry about yourself. Because you now have the responsibility of knowing what I know and what you know and what you're going to do about it. Because the time's going to come. History's going to call on people. There are leaders that are you've never heard of that are going to be the next Jefferson, Jackson, Adams, people who are going to rise up to the challenge that are quiet. You've never heard of them. Who knows what we got in this room right now? But history called upon them, and they were there. One last thing I want to leave, and this is a new video I'm going to do. It's an article I wrote a while ago. I said the two coming American revolutions. With the same paradigm of the urban areas being bad and the rest of the area. You know, I mean, look at Katrina, okay? Natural disaster, and what do we have? We had just animal, you know, rapes and murders and riots and looting, all the other crap down there, okay? When the Midwest floods, do you see that stuff going on? No. When you see these tornadoes ripping up whole towns, do you hear about looting? No. It's neighbor helping neighbor. It's families helping families because they know their neighbors. They care. They've been there a long time. That is our power, folks. That's what's going to succeed in the next paradigm, okay? And I'm trying to lay the intellectual foundation. So this article I wrote, The Two Coming Revolutions, the American Revolution, 10 years before the first shot was fired at Lexington and Concord, there was the Sons of Liberty. That's the reason why I named it the Sons of Liberty Academy. It's not some military, militant thing. There was the Sons of Liberty, and you had the committees of correspondence, and you had thoughtful men who laid the intellectual foundation for the revolution before the first shot was fired. And they tried to do it peacefully, but they wouldn't let it go. I believe that we are going to be able to do this peacefully. We're just going to walk away. And we can do it individually, and there's nothing they can do about it. That's a wonderful thing. Nobody can stop you from becoming independent. Nobody can stop you from taking, well, if you have a 401k and you have a job, you can't get it out, but no one can stop you from extracting your wealth. No one can stop you from, you know, buying guns and ammo and food and doing all the basic things. I learned how to garden last year. I've never gardened in my life, but I don't want to start learning when my life depends on it. So I did a good job last year. I'm going to make it bigger next year, and who knows? No one can stop you from being independent, okay? But beyond the physical stuff that you could be buying right now, the most important thing you should be doing is your health, okay? And the next most important thing, up here, okay? The mental preparation, I think, is ultimately what people are not going to be able to deal with. You know, I did a video called The Shock of a New Paradigm. I have a YouTube channel, Truth Never Told, on YouTube. If you haven't been there, go on there. I viewed three Bernie Madoff investors, okay? A British major lost all of his money. A bond trader or a hedge fund manager managed $1 billion, Christian Schnorr, you know, big you know, he had it all going on, big family, you know, billionaire fund manager. And this other guy is a French guy whose family's wealth went back to King Louis XIV. His family loaned King Louis XIV money, billions of dollars. And he had it all invested with Madoff and it all went away. Okay? All three of these men, you would have traded anything to live their lives. They had the education, the looks, the connections, the knowledge. They had everything going for them. Okay? But they could not deal with the shock of a new reality, a new paradigm that they were broke. And that they were complicit in a lie. And you know what all three of them did? Killed themselves. Every single one of them. Bill Foxton, British major, went out into a park bench, blew his brains out. Okay? Christian Schnorr hung himself naked in a closet in a hotel. And then the French guy slit his wrist while taking pills. Okay?
Sure they weren't suicided? Or?
Why? Okay? All three of these guys could have easily gotten another job. They could have easily gone to somebody else and done, I mean, what they knew still is there. They just made the mistake of trusting their wealth with somebody else. Just one of the major reasons why you need to take your wealth out of the system, because you can't trust anybody. The final person that committed suicide was Mark Madoff. Okay? He hung himself on a dog leash while his 2-year-old son slept in the next room. Okay? That is what is going to hurt most people. Besides roving bands of things in middle America, that's what you're going to have to deal with. And it's going to be upon you guys to reach out to these people when they're most desperate and give them an answer. And you don't know what that answer is because you haven't come to your acceptance stage, but that is what that's what it's going to take for you guys. Okay? So the Founding Fathers laid the intellectual foundation for the revolution. Okay, there was another revolution that was going on at the exact same time. Remember the French Revolution? Okay. Founding Fathers created an intellectual foundation, and they had something to fight for. French Revolution was something against. They were against King Louis. They were against not having bread, and it degenerated into the Reign of Terror. You know, look up Robespierre and the Jacobins. It was awful. They upset society so much that after they got done guillotining all the royalty, they started guillotining each other. And then there was bad guys everywhere. They even changed the calendar and the days and the time. So the whole world was upside down. Okay? And it wasn't until Napoleon came back in and, you know, got everything back together. But that's the kind of two revolutions we're going to have. We're going to either have middle America who says, okay, this is a new reality, sucks, but here's the positive things we're going to work forward to. You know, here's our families. We need food. We need energy. We need to, you know, start doing things positively. Hey, guess what? We have some capital. Let's barter. Let's trade. What are you good at? Let's go get some food. You know, you like doing this? That's what's going to work towards something. But urban areas are going to be Occupy Wall Street, and they're going to hang the bankers. They're going to hang the politicians. And after that, they're going to start hanging each other. And that's when the Mad Max scenario comes happen. So that's a video that I'm going to start doing. I'm probably going to do a couple more videos on YouTube, but it's been pretty cool because we've got 2.3 million views in 5 months. By far one of the fastest growing channels out there. And it's because the stuff that I'm talking about is starting to resonate with other people and that they're sharing it and saying, you know what, I get this idea and I may not see the whole picture, but I know I'm on the right path. And then finally, what I'm working towards is this Silver Shield report that I've been putting out. So all this information I put out, so much info. Like, you guys have no clue the amount of energy I spend putting these videos together. And I literally work 70 hours a week in my little bedroom. I'm wearing pajamas most of the time, and I look awful. I've put on 20 pounds since I've started doing this. But I feel that there's just enough time right now to wake up enough people. Okay? And I think that's the most wonderful thing, is if I can wake up one person, who knows what the reverberating effects of that happening. Because every one of your lives that I touch, well, there's tens of thousands of other people out there. What's going to happen when this all goes down? How many lives are going to be saved? How many wonderful things are going to be happening because we're prepared? You know, we'll have our wealth out. So that's why I got thinking. I'm like, wow, not only am I helping people deal with this disgusting reality that we're dealing with, that 28 million Americans are popping pills and probably another 28 million Americans are drinking and another 28 million are watching, you know, American Idol and Extra and drinking their, you know, sorrows away. you know, and the young kids playing the video games. Everybody's trying to distract themselves from the reality that we're not living something that's true to us. Okay? So how awesome would it be if we start doing the opposite consciousness? And then what does that have on the effect of everybody at a time when there's consequences and realities to deal with that we have to question our reality? What can we build? And to think that we have the knowledge of seeing the playbook that has enslaved humanity for 6,000 years, because it's the exact same playbook. I mean, look at what Diocletian did to the Christians back then. You know, they were the bad guys. You know, Hitler with the Jews, and you know, us with the Muslim terrorists right now. Okay, divide and conquer. You know, cognitive dissonance, all these kind of things, doublethink. You know, they're all designed to have us buy into illusion. But what happens when we start building a society where we go the opposite consciousness? Let's stop trying to, you know, get together and go, you know, charge over the hill. Let's all individually be powerful. And then guess what? We can individually cooperate with each other. I would love to have you guys all as my neighbors, business partners, you know, my kids marrying, you know, your kids or whatever. That's the kind of community that we're trying to get together. So in the Silver Shield report that I've been doing, the stuff that I'm talking about is an answer. I don't know if it's the answer, but it is an answer. And so much of the blogosphere only focuses on the uh-ohs of right now. You know, we got the, you know, the Fukushima and euro collapse and dollar collapse and oh my God, this and Agenda 21 and oh my God, and you start going like, oh, I can't take it anymore, okay? And what nobody's done is built the context to understand what's going on. That's what I think the Academy and the Greatest Truth Never Told is helping people understand what I know, okay? Because the biggest problem with the ignorant, sheeple people out there is that they don't know what I know. So don't berate them just because they don't know what you know. You're probably no different than them. You probably weren't any different than them 2 years ago. You should treat them like a child that's lost, because that's really what they are. They don't know what's going on. So would you laugh at a kid that's lost and looking for their way home? No. You take care of them. You prepare for them. You take responsibility for them. Okay? And you walk a path that they should follow. So in this Silver Shield report that I've been doing, I'm laying the intellectual foundation for a new way of life. And I made the quote on YouTube the other day. I said, the foundation of what I'm working towards, I have no doubt will be the most successful civilization in human history. You know why? Because it's going to be built on an opposite consciousness. We're going to do things that nobody else has done. We're not going to have debt or usury, but we can't have equitable investing. We can have partners. Yeah. You know, you don't need to put other people in debt to start a business. Partner with them. You know, if you have capital, you know, all these older guys with a bunch of silver, you can be a partner and an equitable interest and a mentor to a younger guy who's got passion. How many guys in here, women, had their million-dollar idea when they were 20 years old? Everybody had a great idea back then. But you never would have had the opportunity to do anything with it because you're 20 years old. And yet, because you were 20 years old, you're probably way ahead of the time. You were speaking to your generation and what would work for your generation. Because the million-dollar idea usually is the rejection of an old paradigm and say, hey, this resonates with me and my buddies. So that's why the cool music comes out when you're 20 years old. You don't see, you know, cool music coming out from the 60, 70-year-old guys now. No, it's except for Johnny Cash. He did a good job. But that's one of the things. And then I'm of the belief that governments, local governments, are going to be so desperate for capital that we're going to be able to cut deals with local governments and we're going to be able to buy land and have our own sovereignty. And if you want to question me, there's already a movement in Utah where Utah is going to renationalize, I don't know what the state-ized version is, federal lands. You know, most of Utah is owned by the federal government. Well, they're making moves right now to take that land back and put it in Utah's hands so that they can receive, you know, develop and tax and all that other stuff. There's 12 states right now that are moving towards legal tender laws. Utah and South Carolina are, you know, way ahead of the crowd, okay? So if we have this whole group of people who are aware and prepared, who have all these assets, you know, that they have built up, why can't we all get together after this happens and say, hey, let's start building a different paradigm. Let's become partners. Let's become neighbors. Let's do something different. Because individually, we could probably live pretty well, you know? We could go buy a hill and have a solar panels and stuff. That doesn't resonate with me. To me, I want to share and create and do ideas. That's what living is interacting with other people, making them better. So this would be the first time in history that we could have a society, a community, whatever you want to call it, that we don't have to really worry about property taxes. So I believe that there's something called a loyal title where you have total rights to the land and no one can put a lien against it. I believe that we'll be able to negotiate for that. We'll be able to have a sustainable way of life. There's no reason why you have to have a way of life that you're constantly importing energy. I've talked with engineers and developers and all these other guys out there who say, yeah, I mean, we don't have to import 25% of the world's oil and use more efficient technology that doesn't benefit the current paradigm. Like, you know, I'm sure that there's other energies out there that would make oil not as necessary, you know. And what if we created a community where we lived, worked, and played in one area, you know? Save a lot on fuel driving around and going to local malls. What if we had a, instead of a debt-based currency, we had constitutional silver, I mean, and debt-free notes. I mean, we don't have to have money have debt, you know? If you want currency, print it up, make sure the volume's limited, and it'll have value. Trust me, it worked with Lincoln with the greenbacks. Okay? Or the colonial scrip. I mean, that's why America got so well, because we had these debt-free notes floating around when there was no silver. I go into a lot of different things. I got 27 of these reports done. But in the Silver Shield report, we're building the intellectual foundation, but we're also starting to get to know people on the other end so that we can start saying, hey, when this all goes down, because the most important and most valuable thing isn't having the wealth, it's being mentally prepared, but then knowing that you knew somebody who saw this coming before everybody else did. Because I tell you what, after the fact, after this all goes down, I don't want to be talking to anybody. It's going to be too dangerous. There's going to be too many people who are going to say, oh, you know, all these Johnny-come-latelys, all these people who lost everything and that they're desperate. At some point, I'm going away, guys. You're not going to see me. But you know what? I'll be communicating with the people who, you know, have been working with me and that saw this coming ahead of time and that took the hard effort of going through what we need to go through now to come through. So,
Chris,
yep.
I did promise these folks they'd have a
yeah. So I got
five questions for Chris.
Hold on. Let me get the.
Where did we go?
One question.
Okay.
Which is when you talk about the SSRIs and that.
Yeah.
When I was 12, I was feeling depressed. And when I went to get help from a medical doctor, he said, just go on this. So I started taking Zoloft, and I was on it for over a decade.
Yeah.
The lowest dose, but I was on it.
Yeah.
And a year ago, I had tried multiple times to go off, but I would go start breaking.
Mm-hmm.
I would start cracking. And even going down, I had to go to a liquid and taper down.
Yeah.
And even then, I was still having psychotic breaks where I thought I was in a dream world.
Yep.
Okay? And I would look at people and, like, it's completely irrational. I look at somebody's shirt color, and if I didn't like it, I would think the most negative, just awful thoughts about them. Just complete personality change. You go crazy.
Yeah.
I am off it now completely.
Good for you.
But it's no joke. And there are people that are on, I was on the lowest dose, okay? There are people that are on three times what I had that can't cope with reality. So I just wanted to, you know, and the drugs, you know, we take them because when you go to these people, we've been trained through our oppression school system, you know, modeled after that we can't think for ourselves, that we're always look to the expert, the new priest class,
yep,
that Bertrand Russell talked about. We can't think for ourselves, though the expert says we must be.
They don't want you to think for yourself.
Yeah, they don't want you. And so, yes, you're totally right about that. That's going to be crazy. But I was wondering if you could talk about, or just make a quick comment on the college and degrees, you know.
I hate college. I have a $250,000 college degree sitting on my wall. I went to Boston College. You don't need a diploma to learn. I learned more by just picking up a book and following a passion. In fact, most of the things that you're, the most education really is the most indoctrination. You're not learning, you're becoming indoctrinated. Our school system is designed around an input-output process. They tell you what to learn, you regurgitate it. The better you regurgitate that input-output process is how smart you are. What's missing is the trivium. This is a word you should write down and look up. The trivium is a three-step process where you observe, use logic, and then use rhetoric. So the logic is your freedom, folks. being able to logically dissect what is going on in the world, that is your freedom. So long as you constantly take whatever is told to you, you're being manipulated by others that do think for themselves. Okay? So I did a video called Your Indoctrination on YouTube. Watch it. It'll blow your mind if you hated school, and you'll now know why. Go ahead.
Your Indoctrination on YouTube?
Yeah, Your Indoctrination. Just Google, or go into YouTube, do Your Indoctrination. Truth Never Told is my YouTube channel, so there's, I don't know, 100 videos up there right now, and I probably have 400 more to go. Go ahead.
Hey, Chris, I know you're big on the manipulation of comics and
yes.
the silver market. What is your feeling about the up-and-coming Shanghai Exchange?
Is that the one with Andrew McGuire?
China's going to open up their own comics.
Okay.
Allowing
yeah, there's the Chinese, I think, are they're playing us pretty good, and they're doing exactly what I'm telling you to do. They're staying inside this paradigm, taking all the wealth that they can out, and creating their own paradigm. There was a what the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange? Yeah, I did an article on that that the Rothschilds are actually behind that. Yeah. But there was a meeting 2 weeks ago of the BRICS nations, so Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They're tired of begging the Anglo-American Empire of getting a better seat at the IMF and the World Bank and all that stuff, and they're just going to create their own. They're going to create their own paradigm, their own stock exchanges, their own currency exchanges, everything outside of their paradigm. They're becoming independent of, and that's exactly what we're doing.
They think they did it wrong?
What?
They think they did it wrong, the Chinese?
Well, the one thing about these nations, all five of them have suffered under the hands of the Anglo-American Empire at some point. I don't know why we think that they're going to play our game after we collapsed Russia. We supported all the communists, and this is a thing that you'll get into. We created the Bolshevik Revolution. We created Hitler. We funded Hitler. Okay? Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, they funded Hitler during our Great Depression. That's where all the capital went. That's why he was able to build these huge mausoleums and gymnasiums while we had poor people here.
Do you feel once they succeed in developing that program,
the BRICS,
other nations follow suit, then our dollar is worthless?
They've already done it. Japan and China used to do $2 trillion of bilateral trade using our dollar. It's crazy for, I think, Americans to think that if we wanted to trade with Brazil, that we would use, like, the ruble. But that's what Japan and China were doing. They were using some third party's currency to conduct all trade between them. Because we'd set up the institutions and banking systems and all these things that after World War II, you had to use it. And now they're saying, hey, we don't need to use this. You have yen and you have won. Let's just trade those. Why do we need dollars? So that's $2 trillion that's going to eventually flow into the commodities or our country. And that's where hyperinflation comes. More money chases after a limited amount of goods. One good thing to reach out to people that's great to wake people up. Oh, man, gas prices are really high. Yeah, sucks. It's not actually the gas prices going up. It's your dollar that's going down. It takes more dollars to buy the exact same amount of goods. It's because the purchasing power is losing. It's not because gas is going up. It's because there's more dollars chasing after a limited amount of goods. Oh, really? I never thought of it that way. Yeah.
How important do you think food production, farming?
Those are where the next millionaires are going to be.
So along with silver.
Well, here's the problem I see. The gentleman, the mine, farmland, you run the risk of being in the wrong place at the wrong time or having a government that says, hey, like Russia, your lands are our lands. Or in Zimbabwe. I mean, that's how Mugabe got him. Got all these farmers to support. Hey, we'll give you land. We'll give you tractors. We'll give you fuel. And you work the land and we'll give you all the white man's land. After 3 years, all these farmers, they had all their crops taken from them, and they got shown nothing. They just worked 3 years for nothing. And they eventually hyperinflated it away. Okay? It's risky to hold any asset except for that which you can carry in your hand. Okay? Even a farm. Okay? Even a mine. Because you don't know the future. Okay? I would love to go out right now and say, hey, all of us, let's go to like Montana and let's go build. No. Another thing you should look at, Ultimate Exit Strategy. It's a three-part video series that I did. It lays out why you should divest yourself of all paper assets, buy some silver, okay, because of all the fundamentals that I go over in the silver bullet and the silver shield. But it's the idea that you have a loyal title, no counterparty risk, okay? No one can take that from you, okay? You can hide it, you can stay in the ground for the next 20 years. I mean, you know, give it to your kids. I know, but then they gotta go look for it. So I did another thing, confiscation of, everybody's afraid of the confiscation. If a government is going to get so desperate that they're going to go after some guy with some mercury dimes, okay, what are they most likely going to do? They're going to go after the mines first. They're going to go after the ETFs. They're going to go after the COMEX. They're going to go after Eric Sprott, where all the billions of ounces, before they're going to start sending SWAT teams. Because I tell you what, they do one SWAT team raid to one of your guys' houses, people are going to know about it, and I tell you what, it's lock and load time because they're no different than pirates coming into my house. Somebody wanted to take your kids. What would you do? And at some point, I'm all about nonviolence and noncompliance and walking away, but I tell you what, if the issue is forced on you, you have the moral authority and moral right to defend yourself and your assets and the means to support yourself.
Or your neighbor.
I have bullets. Go ahead.
We know the world economy works under energy, food, water, and weapons.
Yes.
And when those go out of balance, then I think you're going to have that collapse like you're talking about.
Yep.
The problem I see, though, is how do you avoid fascism? If somebody comes along and says, I'll give you food and water, I'll give you energy, and I got the weapon, how are you going to avoid that? A bunch of independent people are not going to be able to avoid fascism.
Well, you're right. I mean, you look at what happened with Germany. You know, here was this most educated Catholic society, and look at what happened to them. I don't fear Obama. I fear the guy that comes after Obama. You know, all these executive orders that have been passed, everybody goes, oh, you know, Bush passed the Patriot Act, Obama with this one that was just done on the NDAA or all this other stuff, National Defense Authorization Act or whatever it was. It's a cumulative power that we're keep giving to this executive branch. You know, now it's legal for the government to go take you and you have no rights and go away. They're even saying they can kill you now. Okay? To get to your point, Hitler came from the Weimar Republic's hyperinflation, okay? I think the whole, his group came out of their hyperinflation. The group that we have now is the problem. And when their paradigm collapses, their ability to control, manipulate, and use the illusion to get all these guys like me who joined thinking we were doing the patriotic, honorable thing to do that, you know, to work for that system. When that illusion collapses, who's going to carry out those tyrannical fascist orders? After every single police guy who's got this pension that they've been, you know, loading up gets robbed. You know, the military guys who already live an awful existence. I mean, if you think the military men suffer in war, think about the lives that they live at home and after. It sucks being in the military. I wouldn't wish it upon anybody. Okay? But these guys have been fighting for 10 years. They know in the back of their minds that they've been lied into these wars. I mean, it's kind of common knowledge. Like, no one's actually come out and said, but Iraq, really? Weapons of mass destruction? Osama bin Laden's dead. Like, why are we in Afghanistan? Like, what, 10 years? We got another 3 years? Now we want war with Iran? You're going to lie to us about that? Okay? So all these systems that are fascist, that, you know, totalitarian, all this other stuff, they have in place. But the problem is, who's going to be the one to pull the trigger? Are you going to go risk your life following some orders of guys who just robbed your entire wealth when your family's starving at home, when you're disillusioned with everything that you've done in your life? You're really going to go charge off and go attack your neighbor and make your neighbors the new bad guys? You know, it's kind of easy to make the Muslims the bad guys because most people don't know Muslims. I have. I served with them in the Marines. It was weird. I had three guys in my unit. They were Muslim. I didn't know what a Muslim was. Tell you what, they're one of the best guys that I know. Okay? But it's easy making somebody else the bad guy. It's a whole different Rubicon to cross when you got to make your neighbor the bad guy. Okay? And that's the mental thing that I don't think is going to be able to happen. But you're right. I think in certain parts of this country, New York City, Chicago, there are going to be fascism. No doubt about it. But you can't tell me the rest of this country with all these gun owners who have been loading up on guns. I mean, Obama's been the best gun salesman ever. Are going to lay down to some foreign guys, even if they're coming from Brooklyn to come to Detroit or whatever, that they're going to just lay down. Do you know that Michigan has more? Michigan hunters would be the third largest standing army in the world. And they're decentralized. I got to do a video on this guy. There was a sniper in Norway or Sweden that held off 10,000 Russians. Okay, they called him White Death. Look that up. There's a great story about this guy. He was the most prolific sniper in history. I mean, he whacked like 400 guys and held all. They had Russian whole troops that were stopped from invading Norway because of this guy. They were afraid of White Death. And later on, they came out to find out he was a 5'3" guy with a iron sight rifle. That one guy.
And he had a ladder to stand on.
No, he sat. And that's one of the things. Everybody thinks snipers are laying down and doing it. He sat and got so low sitting there, they couldn't see him. But that's one of the wonderful things I think about the Second Amendment. And I don't think people realize owning a firearm is the great equalizer against an oppressive collective. I've been in the Marines. I traded in military operations and urban terrain. That was like my specialty. I was good at that. Okay, I know that one guy that's determined to defend in a defensible position can hold off 300 Marines. You literally have to blow up the whole block because there's no real way of going in there. Okay, and that's what you guys are all going to have. And you're going to have the means and the need to defend yourselves. Do I think it's going to get that bad? Mm-mm. Because they're not going to even have the ability to move out, go in gangs. Like, traveling is going to be tough, you know? So, you know, worrying about urban gangs coming from Detroit, at some point there's going to be a bunch of neighbors in between you who are going to say, uh-uh. And then these guys are going to go, well, I'm not going out there. They're crazy, man. They're shooting at us. So go ahead.
If I walk away from the system.
Yes.
How do I get enough energy, food, and water, and weapons to survive?
Well, that's the tough part. You can't totally become independent of the system. And that's one of the reasons why I want people to stay inside this paradigm. You know, downsize. I used to have two cars. I have one car now. Okay. You know, as store up, you know, really what silver is stored up energy and wealth. I mean, there's a video I did on YouTube going through the extraction and refining process of silver. Tons of ore to get a pin-sized amount of silver.
Amazing.
How much energy goes into doing that? And to think that you can buy that, you know, for $30? I mean, the grinders, the cyanide pools, and you know, all this crazy stuff. And to get this, afterwards, I think that we're going to have the capital to build our own power plants, our own solar panels, all that other stuff. Okay? It doesn't make sense right now to invest a little bit of capital that you can to stake your... And that's the wonderful thing. Like, once your wealth is in this form, you can go anywhere. Okay? But if you build your farm and you have a house and solar panels and all that stuff, you don't know if that's a bad area to be. And then how do you extract your wealth from that physical reality that you have and move somewhere else?
If you already have the coin, then you can...
Yeah, I mean, you could literally say, you know, here.
I think you already gave an
to them. Okay.
People are going to have to partner together.
Yes.
In order to stop fascism.
Yep.
And it is going to break out.
Individually, though, and I don't think it's.
And no doubt, it's not going to break out in the big cities.
Yeah. They're going to want it.
Because they're so dependent.
They're already dependent upon fascism right now.
They're going to be predisposed, though.
It's a blue state, red state mentality.
Right now, yeah. Actually quarantining these areas where the guys in the outlying areas are the rules. Aren't really going to be the subject matter of the immediate.
Yeah, I mean, even look in our science fiction, Escape from New York, Escape from L.A., you know, RoboCop in Detroit, all right? It's always down there, okay? Even in 1984, it was all the cities, and yet when he got out, they were in the countryside, they were free. And that's because it's so much more difficult to have a control system where there's, you know, few and far people in between. You know, you can't have, you know, checkpoints and roving things because people just move around. So being out in the country is the way to be. Being surrounded by people who are like you, have the same morality, same idea. That to me is the way out of this. And like I said, two coming revolutions, urban area, wouldn't want to be countries. Sounds good.
Huh. What about the possibility of, while the U.S. experiences the economic turmoil and all that, you know, the debtors, the people of the nations and the that hold our debt, right?
Yeah.
What is to stop them from creating an external threat, to literally coming in to confiscate their
Yeah, all right. So, first of all, what nation's going to invade this nation? Like, who could literally pull it off? Like, we just got done saying there's 400,000 hunters in Michigan. Okay?
I mean, they come in and bomb the joint, but how? They're going to do something on the ground that's going to be
And give me the historical precedent. Like, China, name one war that they started. Like, they invaded somebody else. You know? We're the ones that have been going out there and doing that. Yeah. Every single war that's been around, it's because we've been starting it. Okay? I mean, like, another thing that I get into is all these false flags. You know, the Vietnam War, all you baby boomers, man, that was all a lie. Gulf of Tonkin incident never happened. Never happened. Robert McNamara admitted that. Think of how many brothers and sisters and family and guys that you know have been either killed or wiped out from that. It was all a lie. And for what? So these guys can make more money. Billions of dollars of profits going through that military-industrial complex. Oh, yeah, there was oil there, too.
I would think that the big guys have to have some big
they have their plans. They're doing that right now.
That will make us all scared and want to seek their guidance.
The only thing that I could... listen, I did another video called the Three Coming False Flags. Okay, I'm a firm believer that before this is all over, they're not going to go quietly into the night. Okay, I think that they're going to pull a false flag, and it could be one of three things. It could be a military false flag. You know, sink a ship. They like doing that. You look up the USS Liberty. Look up, you know, the USS Maine. They like sinking ships, blaming it on somebody else and going off to war. Yeah. Yeah, like the Enterprise. I think that was a good one. And then...
Shane wanted to do that, right?
Yeah. Actually, there's a video. Seymour Hersh was sitting in on one of Cheney's last days, and they were starting to start a war with Iran. And they came up with an idea of sinking an American ship and blaming it on Iran. Okay, this is Seymour Hersh. He's probably one of the most respected reporters in Washington. And he's talking about this like, you got to see the video. He's like laid back, like this is all normal stuff. They were trying to start another war based off of falseness. And they didn't run that part of the story because they didn't go ahead with it. The fact that they were even talking about it is scary. The fact that I would have said, oh yeah, let's go get those Iranians. My life, my buddy's lives, for a lie. Vietnam, a lie. Iraq, a lie. It's all lies. Our wealth is a lie. Our media is a lie. Everything is a lie.
Hiding in plain sight, too.
Yeah.
What's the other two?
Go ahead.
Did you see a specific catastrophic event that's going to trigger this whole thing where it's going to be complete once it starts?
Like I said, you'll know it when it's going to happen based off of, is it a real thing or is it a paper thing? And what I mean by paper things, like we've had a paper problem with Greece, a paper problem with Spain, a paper problem with our debt forever. That can continually be papered over and over again. They own the media. They'll print the debt. They'll hide the losses. They'll put it over here. They'll manipulate it anyway, other way.
But will it get to the point where that would be in the play?
Yes. Stop. That's why I think at some point, silver is going to be one of those things because they have thousands of paper contracts laying claim to 1 ounce of silver.
Is it just silver? What about gold? What about other precious?
No, just silver. Okay? We know implicitly all the gold that's ever been mined throughout human history has been treasured. I mean, you think about it, gold's treasure. Like, we take care of gold. We don't lose gold. We don't use it for anything else. Jewelry, we store it. We treasure it. It's on religious artifacts. It's treasure. Okay? Silver, on the other hand, for the last 138 years has been trashed as an industrial metal. We throw it away every time a new cell phone comes out. It's used all over the place. It's the second most widely used commodity in industrial use with over 10,000 uses. And we use it in such small quantities, it's not even possible to recover. I mean, they literally have socks now that the silver is an antibacterial that prevents body odor. Okay, they wash it in silver, it's micro ounces of it, and it's gone forever. We've literally thrown away all of humanity's silver into toxic trash piles in such small quantities we'll never be able to use it again. So much so that the United States Geological Survey said that if we continue to use and abuse this metal, by 2020, it will be extinct. Okay? So I wrote the guy that wrote that, and I said, or Adrian Douglas said that United States Geological Survey said that. Adrian Douglas is this big guy with the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. good guy. You know, he's got a lot of gravitas in the thing. So I actually wrote the guy. I said, extinct. That's a pretty bold thing to say that something is going to go extinct. And he wrote back to me, and I wrote this in the Silver Bullet and the Silver Shield, the video series. He said, well, I don't think the United States Geological Survey would ever use the term extinct, but given that there's, I don't know, 510,000 ounces or tons of estimated silver in ground, and that we're consuming 25,000 tons of silver a year, within 20 years, it would become extinct. But given unless there is a dramatic rise in price, more exploration can be brought on and wiser use of it. So at $30 an ounce of silver, it's not worth recycling. It's not worth doing it. But if silver was $1,000 an ounce, people would start using more wisely. All of a sudden, we can't get socks with antibacterial, you know, things. We
it
you know,
extinct, though,
it won't.
It's a stable element on the periodic table. For one thing.
Yeah, it's not ever going to go away, but it has to have a revaluation so that we treat it instead of a industrial metal as a precious metal. Okay, gold doesn't have that going for it. We haven't thrown all of humanity's gold away. Okay, and who owns most of the gold? Central banks and rich guys. Who are we against, guys? Opposite consciousness.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Silver sold in many different forms. What do you suggest? Buying from junk silver?
Don't call it junk around me. So that was one of the things. Yeah. That was one of those things.
Junk silver.
Yeah. That's one of those things I talked with this guy.
But it's all, it goes up to 100 ounce.
I know. Listen, when I first woke up, I was all buying 100-ounce bars. I couldn't get enough of them. I'm like, I just want the most amount of silver for the least amount of dollars. I don't care what it is. I just got it, okay? As I've gone along, I only buy, like, mercury dimes, okay? So guy I was working with, you know, I come across all these odd people who email me with these long letters going, oh, my God, you've changed my life, and, you know, I got an idea, and how about this, and all of this. And this one guy was Drew Mason, and he ran a company called St. Joseph Partners, and he said, I broker silver, but, you've woken me up. He said, I've been in this business my entire life. I've never looked at what I sold the way that you look at it, and you've inspired me. He says, I want to take your vision and put it out there. And I said, well, the first thing that we got to do is change the name of junk silver. I said, that's an intellectual assault on it. That's putting it out there. Like, no one would say junk Apple stock, you know, but they do that with assault rifle. You know, you don't think of it as the great equalizer of the individual against the collective. You know, it's like, you know, it's life. So I told him, I said, we got to rename it. So I said constitutional silver, because that's what it is. Our dollar in the Constitution is defined about how many grams of silver where it was in a dollar until we demonetized it. Here's another great thing. Look up The Crime of 1873 and The Wizard of Oz as a monetary allegory. You'll never look at that movie again.
Yep.
The same.
Yep.
Go ahead.
One other thing, and the same thing, Al. With the dollar collapse, do you think that the new form of currency will resort back to, which is why you're buying the...
Yeah, the reason why I like constitutional silver is because it's already been recognized as money. Like, you know, if you're a boomer, you remember it being money, okay? It also has the lowest premium right now. I mean, shit, it's junk. Why would you pay a premium for junk? It's the most divisible, okay? So between those three factors, you can buy the most of it that, you know, for your dollar that you can. It's divisible, and it's in small transactions. Because when I was buying 100-ounce bars, I had no clue. I'm like, well, when I actually come to sell it, what am I going to do? Go to some farmer and say, hey, I got this brick of silver. Can I have some corn?
Can I have your whole farm?
Yeah, and he'd be like, dude, you can have my whole farm. I mean, what am I going to do just to go buy food? And if you have constitutional silver, one of the greatest ways I found of valuing silver is that, let this sink in, throughout all of history, in two-thirds of the world today, 12 hours of hard human labor has been valued at 1/10 of an ounce of silver.
Less than
$96. Okay? When you look at humanity that is not surrounded by the debt access that we have and the death that we run around, okay, that is what real human labor is worth. And it goes back to the Roman soldiers with the denarius. It was 1/10 of an ounce. That was their dime. Every Roman soldier got paid one denarius for every day that they served the Roman legion. And that one denarius paid for, in the, you know, they're fighting barbarians. You know, you've seen Gladiator. I mean, they're fighting some serious stuff. But that 1 ounce paid for their family, as many kids as you could have, their house, their taxes, their food, their clothes, you know, even a lion match in the Colosseum, you know, to have an extra bit of money. Okay? That's what that paid for. Look at the turn of the century. Factory workers were paid a dime a day. You know, we've seen that movie Far and Away with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. They come to the United States. They end up working at some chicken factory, stripping feathers off chickens with steam hoses in 12 hours a day. And Tom Cruise goes and does some prize fighting and comes home with $4. Well, $4 back then was, you know, $4 of silver. Okay? And Nicole Kidman goes, wow, that would be more than I would make in a month working at the factory. And then look at the world today. Two-thirds of the world today lives off of what? $2 a day. We hear this all the time. Like, we're supposed to feel guilty about it. Okay? Well, what is a tenth of an ounce of silver worth? $2.50. So if you start thinking about that shit for 100 ounces, what would that cost me? Like $3,000. Think about the historical significance of you being able to buy 100 ounces. Think about throughout all the people that have ever lived throughout all of history to have 100 days, or 1,000 days, I'm sorry, 1,000 days of hard human labor saved up in that equivalent amount. Guys, this is like life-changing stuff to me. And then think about the historical significance of a lot of caring, passionate, thoughtful people that took the time and energy to go out and buy that stuff, to store it up. And what kind of world can we start building with that? What kind of capital will we have access to? And if we can start planting our foot somewhere and say, hey, here's the social contract that we have, okay? Honest money and honest people. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. No taxes. Sustainable. Friends, family. We care about each other. We have a stake in each other. We have an equitable interest in each other and our success. What kind of world can we start creating? What kind of brains can we attract afterwards? I mean, after the Russia collapsed, you had nuclear scientists driving taxi cabs because they couldn't find jobs. Okay? Look this up. Look up thorium reactors, light thorium reactors. Okay? Right now, they would cost $250 million to produce nuclear power that has no nuclear waste, much more efficient. But guess what, folks? You can't use it for nuclear weapons. Okay? You'll never see these power plants created right now because the military-industrial complex wouldn't allow it. The regulatory agents wouldn't allow it. But I tell you what, if we're a bunch of big rich guys and we buy a whole bunch of land and we get all the proper, you know, power going on, you think we could build a light thorium reactor and produce power for everybody? Yeah. Can we buy a whole bunch of solar panels? Yeah.
You don't even need it. There's so much energy.
Yeah, it's out there. Go ahead.
Okay. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I would like to ask Chris to draw a couple of tickets, though. So let's start with the important stuff. This is a constitutional half dollar. Does anybody know what that's worth?
$12.
Almost, yeah. $11.50, $11.45 as of Friday. So, Chris, can you draw a ticket? We got two of those, and we got a couple of gift cards.
Oops. Two of them?
Yeah. Go ahead and grab. Grab two.
Okay. We got Andre B. and K. Paul.
Nice. I'm not going to throw it to you.
Yeah, go right through that window.
When people ask you, I'm sure you've been asked. And I heard it. I don't know if it was you or someone's mom who said, when you buy some, and when you go to bed that night, and you wake up the next morning, if you feel you still need more, you go buy more.
No, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you?
Yeah. So the question is, and I get this a lot, how much is enough? Okay, let me read this for him. I don't know, what's this? Chad D. and
Carol? Carol Kearns.
How much is enough? Okay. So I try telling people, get the buffer. You know, this is a true story. I have a pizza delivery guy who buys a Mercury Dime every day. Okay? Every day he's saving up one day's worth of hard human labor. Okay? You can make a buffer for yourself in buying silver. But I've also had a lot of guys. I have a real estate developer out in California who's selling his last piece of property. He's got $20 million. I tell you what, he's going to buy a bunch of silver with it. I have a software guy up in Canada who asked me the same question. How much is enough? Okay, if you want to create a buffer, 100 ounces, to me, I think it would be awesome. 1,000 ounces, you're going to be historically significant. There was kings of England that did not have 1,000 ounces. They had to use tally sticks for 700 years. Okay, historically significant. But I also know guys that have tons of silver. So my question that I answer most people is, what kind of blessing do you want to be on humanity? Because to me, that's a gift. That if you're able to acquire that much wealth, and then what can you do with it later on? That to me is something people are going to write books about. Okay, and it, to me, if you want to live forever, you want to be compassionate, you want to establish something big, there is no amount of enough. And it's not being greedy. It's a matter of transferring power to help others. Okay? So go ahead.
Since I won, I feel compelled to ask a question.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 expires next year. What impact do you think that's going to have on everything
we're— I have seen that. I don't know how... I mean, it's just going to get renewed or... They're not going to say, oh, that's it.
Oh,
we should have thought.
Because the American public as a whole really doesn't understand the whole Federal Reserve system, that they're not going to be like, wait a second here. We have a chance to speak up.
There's no way of fixing this paradigm. You can't fix it. You got to just walk away from it. Any effort, like, you know, even the another issue that I looked into is the sovereignty thing, like, oh, you know, you're contracted and you're a corporation, you're sold and all that stuff, and that, you know, you can go into these courts and fight the sovereignty. That's working within the system, and then you're also asking them to play nice. You know, these guys aren't playing nice. They'll just change the rules, just like the COMEX. Like, you've started, you know, investing, you know, like the Hunt brothers and the COMEX, they'll just change the rules. So it's a complete waste of time, energy, and money to work within the paradigm, walk away from it. That's the best I got.
You won't see interest rates go up either for forever.
You can't.
Okay.
But they'll print the money. They'll trash the dollar. What's his name?
The dinar is going to do anything.
The what?
The dinar.
Are you talking about the Iraqi dinar?
Yeah.
No, it's still paper currency. Now, if you're talking about the dinarum and the other one that Malaysia's got, they started circulating gold and silver coins.
Mexico.
So the money basket theory is no good.
The what?
To diversify in foreign currency and play the game.
All paper assets. There is no, unless you can hold it in your hand, I wouldn't touch it.
Not even with revaluation?
Nope. There isn't a paper asset in the world that I would buy right now.
Even if a temporary reevaluation.
Think about what you're saying. You're trying to stay inside your paradigm. It's ending.
And you cash it in for silver.
Nope. You're either you're inside the game or outside the game. This is musical chairs, folks. The whole world is playing musical chairs, waiting for the music to stop. Take the last chair now while you can, because I tell you what, this is the last thing I want to leave you guys with. If you guys don't heed my message, okay, I cannot imagine the amount of guilt that you're going to have of not listening when this does happen. Okay? You guys do have an opportunity to do something very special right now. Okay? And if you don't really commit to it or really understand it or not do everything that you can, it's going to be just as difficult for the people who had their world wiped away as the ones that said, ah, shit, I could have done more. You know? So this is a heavy responsibility, but this is what living is like. You know, when you have a child, I didn't start waking up until I had a kid. As soon as I found out I was pregnant, that's when in 2005, I was like, God, I'm responsible for somebody else. But that responsibility, that's what, you don't go to movies, you know, to read about some hero of some guy who just, you know, la-di-da'd through life. No. Go through it to the guys that went through the challenge, took on responsibility, stood up for themselves, took on the bad guys, and won. That's what we can do.
You got some right history.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
No, I couldn't because I really have to get
Chris,
back.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.